Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio! Anyone listening? Anyone listening? Knock, knock! Listen, listen, this is Sammy Callahan, and you're listening to him on Yakuza Kick Radio. You better all listen!
Yakuza Radio, love the name, Yakuza.
You know what I'm saying? My homie J-Cat and the homie Eric.
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio. I'm your host, J-Cat Morris, and as always with me is my co-host, Eric Williams. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, J-Cat. Another fun and exciting show here lined up for you here on a beautiful Thursday night.
I don't know about that. It's piped cold out this motherfucker. It's snowing this morning and shit. I don't know what the fuck this weather's doing, but anyway, we have quite an interesting show for all of you. For those of you that didn't listen, last night, a show by the name of And Then the Bell Rings, hosted by Jerry Wiseman, he put on a masterpiece of a show. He somehow managed to get Ian Rotten onto a show, and he managed to get Ian Rotten to sit there and get beaten like a piñata for 2 hours by himself, by Mickey Knuckles, by Bull Payne, Madman Pondo, followed by J.C. Bailey's father, Joe Bailey, followed by none other than the half-breed Billy Graham, who we have decided to have on as our guest tonight, and we figured why not? Why not bring on Billy? Let's talk about, you know, everything that's going to, you know, everything that went on last night and how it felt, you know, to destroy Ian Rotten on the air. And I'm sure it was a long time coming for Billy. We'll have Billy on in 1 second. Before I do, I'd like to just real quick dedicate a song to Ian Rotten, and then we'll bring on Billy.
You're no good. You're no good. You're no fucking good, motherfucker, fuck your ass. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good. You're a piece of shit.
You know who gave me that name?
Right through the very heart of it.
New York, New York. Sex from behind, I'll fuck your gay ass. You're fucking gay. You're fucking gay. Don't fuck with me. You're gay and faggot. Piece of shit. Son of a bitch. You son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
There we go. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome back to the show. show, the leader of Cult Fiction, Half-Breed Billy Graham.
Does that mean I talk now?
Yeah.
How in the hell do you follow up that awesome mix? And we got everybody in there, a little Nazareth in there jamming it. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good. Ian, you're no good. I want to say it again. You're no good, you're no good, you're no good. Ian, you're no good. Well, there's one other thing you have to remember when you're running these radio shows. We here at the Cult Fiction Compounds, immense production studios, are getting a message here across the board. I'd just like to remind you that you're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. Tonight's subject is very volatile, and there will be some language that's not fit for children, because by the time Billy Graham gets done tonight, he's going to drop more F-bombs than Nick Gage at a fucking swearing contest.
Absolutely.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Man, I got to say something real quick, man. Like, last time, man, we were talking on your show, man. It was chill. We were talking about all kinds of crazy shit, you know, drove a woman out of my life forever for you know, exposing our sexcapades on live air, because she seemed to be a little self-conscious. No more of those titties for me. But anyway, there's plenty more where that came from. But anyway, I know I am what's known as a terrible interview, but a great guest, I guess, because trying to interview me, trying to get a word in edgewise is difficult, so I apologize for that, but I am what I am, like Popeye, and boy, I made a couple notes here in reference to things I heard on the show last night once I got back. I got calls and emails and text messages and Facebook bloopity bloop 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 crazy. And, you know, Billy, you know, JC's dad is on the radio having it out with Ian. You got to get on. I had not heard the first half of the show. I did not know that Mickey and Bull and Pondo had been on there already. I didn't know what the host had covered. I just could not stand to hear Joe, who I love very dearly, being lied to in any way, shape, or form, disrespected by John Williams. And I was afraid that in my heat I had blown a confidence when I blurted out about him beating the shit out of Mickey. And I felt, oh, my God, you know, she's going to be mad because I spoke up and said something that she told me in confidence. Well, I don't know whether to say that I'm glad that it didn't get me in any hot water with her, but you know, and it's good to tell the truth, and it's good, Mickey, that you came out and told the truth. I'd like to say, everybody, you know, the response today, I've been fogged with emails and people trying to chat with me and posts on my Facebook and, you know, compliments, even in places where people usually like to flame me, troll me, and taunt me. And I'd like to say that I took some particular pleasure or delight or am proud of myself, or I have some kind of resolution, or I can pat myself on the back like Barry Horowitz, but I can't, because, you know, there's nothing that's going to ever give me any satisfaction or any joy about any of it. You know, it is what it is, but it's certainly, for anybody that thinks, oh, it was nothing new or anything, no, it was something new. It was new to finally pin his slimy ass to a wall and voice to voice. Yes, I know Ian made the comment, I'm a big man, I'm a tough guy over the phone. I just want to start there. Okay, tough guy. What is a tough guy? Okay, I'm an intelligent person. I'm a grown man. You know, while people take shots at me for being a 30-something, blah, 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 on certain message boards. No, I'm 51 years old, okay? I've lived a half a century on this world.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot different perspective and definition of what a tough guy, a tough man, a tough human being is. And you're fucking right, I'm tough, okay? Does that mean that I can solve everything with my fists? No, I weigh, what, 168 pounds, dripping wet, with a body with a terminal disease, half a century fucking old, born skinny mini to start with. I just think it's funny and it's disturbing And it's ridiculous that in the year 2011 that so many people run around this society and this planet and think that every time there's a difference of opinion, there's a debate, there's a confrontation, that what boils down to is, and you know, we're all guilty of it, but if we got a dick or we got testosterone, but thinking that the way things are resolved is by fisticuffs, by physical threats, by intimidation, it's nonsense. Okay, that's not the world that we live in. This is not 2000 BC. We're not cavemen. You know,
right.
We're not in the arena in Rome. This is not how conflict is resolved, by making threats. And of course, this is the only thing that Mr. Coy Boy Williams knows anything about, is intimidation, assault, and beating, and things like that. And go ahead, but yeah, I just want to make sure.
Real quickly,
just so all your viewers know, I know this isn't as exciting, you know, hearing me be the person that I really am on this show. Not that I wasn't myself last night, but very obviously there's not going to be quite as much fire without having fucktard here in person to scream, holler, and yell at. And that wasn't premeditated either. It's just that the anger that you people were hearing last night was genuine. It was real. It was not premeditated. I didn't think of anything to say. I didn't even know it was going on, and everything I said was just blurted out of my mouth. And so, yes, oh, my God, hang me on this one, Adolf Hitler's children. I was trying to make a metaphorical point. I was. The point being that every time something comes out, this guy is going to throw it in my face that I care about his kids, and he's going to even now use his son as a tool in this battle to try to be manipulative. I care about John Calvin. He's a kid. For people that are hard on him, they have no compassion, no understanding. But my point was simply being that even the most reviled villains in the history of the world have had offspring that love them, understandably so. Their perspective is a little tilted. And also, yes, Adolf Hitler did have children. They weren't biological, but metaphorically he did have millions of children who almost brought this world of ours to an end. Okay, go ahead.
Billy, you know, you mentioned about the tough thing and what it means to be tough. And, for some of the people that might not have read and, you know, seen the things that you've posted, and, you know, why don't you run down some of the things that you've survived and been through and maybe detail a little bit more about the disease that you briefly mentioned, so maybe people can actually understand what toughness actually is.
Well, that's weird because you give me a good shouting point, because first of all, I wanted to give a shout out to my bros, my real homies, my blood, my family up there on the Cattaraugus territory, the Seneca Nation. You know, the Res Dogs, man, that got my back. That's one place that I know that there's no false brotherhood, there's no false shit, there's no petty shit with a bunch of egotistical self-marks who the only thing they're worried about is kissing ass and their spot on a work of entertainment. I mean, inherently the business, of course, being designed to keep workers separate from one another and only out for themselves. But, you know, it really hurts when you treat people with kindness. You know, you treat them with respect. You treat them as brothers. You're genuine. You're sincere. I'm not perfect. But, you know, basically the bottom line is being the person that I really am and being a part of the professional wrestling business is not obviously very conducive at points, because my kindness, my honesty, my sincerity, my loyalty, my friendships with people, my offering help in manners ranging from letting people live in my home and on down the line, whether it's cutting music videos, doing anything I can to help anybody, listening to people's problems, what that's made me behind the scenes to 75% of the people in the business that I think are my friends is a retard, a weirdo, a guy who talks too much, and all this other shit. And really, maybe I don't talk too much. Maybe it's that a bunch of fucking kids. Kids is what they are to me. Maybe they need to learn to listen to somebody who's already been through a school of hard knocks that they can't even fucking comprehend, because they can barely survive this bullshit, let alone the shit I've been through. And that's the jumping off point you gave me. The sickness, man, I kept that a secret for a really long time. Only the members of Cult Fiction, my immediate family, you know, knowing about that, because, one, I don't want anybody's fucking pity. I don't want anybody feeling sorry for me or anybody treating me any differently. Oh, now all of a sudden they're going to have a fucking conscience, you know. And then, of course, the other fear being that, you know, exposing the situation is going to mean that either someone's going to say I can't be near a wrestling ring, or some guy's not going to want to kick the shit out of me because he's going to feel bad, you know. And for me, all that shit has just been good for me. I mean, I don't know. But back to the whole thing with my boys up there on the Nations. I would like to say to Ian Rotten, Ishne Hediske Negete, when Yat Hadinyade Anun Nagawa, Ian Rotten, Sedakunya Oda Hadsani Guisquis. That's what I have to say to Ian Rotten from my boys back home. And so when it comes, push comes to shove, if people want to fucking play shit, threaten me, mark me, green light me, you know, pull some shit, I can stoop to that level. I'll tell you that right now. I can sit that level because I'll call up to the res, okay, and I'll bring a busload of my brothers fucking down, and there ain't a fucking locker room in this business that's going to fucking stand up to them, okay, because you know what we've stood up to? We've stood up to 300 years of attempted genocide, okay, and I was very, very involved in my life. This is just a fact. This is not bullshit, and my boys on the res will back me up, okay? I've stood against people carrying badges, committing crimes under the color of law, state police forces from two different countries, troops, tanks, hundreds of rounds of ammunition being fired at my friends and me, trying to defend people's rights, rights to exist, rights that they have guaranteed in federal law and treaty law. I stood under gunfire. I'm a fucking veteran of combat, okay? And so as far as all this tough guy bullshit, flexing muscles, testosterone, and fucking balls from people believing, you know, their own fucking hype, ooh, I'm scared. I'm so fucking scared. I'm so fucking sick of being so humble that I've got to be fucking tagged as a fucking pussy and take this shit from anybody, okay? From anybody. So I don't give a fuck if nobody ever books me again. Fuck it. I don't care. You know what? Is there anybody that fucking doubts my passion for the wrestling business? Have I ever been anything but a team player? Have I not proven to every single fan, to every single person in every locker room that's ever given a chance to me, every promoter that's ever worked with me, okay, that I will do anything I can to help the cause, to help the team, to work for the benefit of everyone? Have I been demanding? Have I been a crybaby? You know, am I exposing something because I want more money or because I don't get to be the world champion? You know, do I think I'm Ric Flair? Is that what's going on? It doesn't matter how much I worked with my friends. You know, I was told Cult Fiction didn't exist. It didn't exist. Why does it exist? Why do I get messages, letters, support, emails all day long, every single day that I even go on this fucking computer? Why do I got fucking people in every country in this world that love what we do, that love the gimmick, that love Cult Fiction, that have got an understanding of what it is, that can see the integrity in it? Okay, that when I say it in promos, that's a work. Yeah, Cult Fiction is more than a gimmick. It's not. It's not a work, I mean. It's not. It is more than a gimmick, okay? There is a certain level of a standard, of a dedication to the principle of you know, being full-blown and dedicated to this indie wrestling scene, to being hardcore. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much approval I get. It doesn't matter how consistent I am. Somebody's always got a fucking beef with me. Somebody's always trying to fucking hold me down. Somebody's always jealous. Somebody's always resentful. And what, because someone handed it to Cult Fiction? Somebody handed it to us? Somebody said, oh, look, the flavor of the month. Let's put these guys over. Let's give them the big push. You know, let's consider them in our booking and really be fair to them. Let's really not bury these guys. These guys are, you know, they're team players. They're dedicated. They're awesome. They're in it for the group. No, it's always, you know, it's always something trying to undermine it, jealousy, you know, people knocking it, people bringing it down. And you know what? I've fucking never complained till now. I've never done nothing. You know what? I seriously, to wake up and realize that most of these motherfuckers don't give two shits about me, you know, I don't want a medal, okay? I don't want even a fucking goddamn, I don't want an iota of sympathy, but fucking, you know, a modicum, a fucking a drizzle of fucking respect as a fucking man and as a human being, and to not be a fucking mockery, a fucking, a person because of his kindness is considered a weakness, people insulting my fucking culture and not even knowing it, it's ridiculous, you know what I mean? So you know what?
Of course.
I will continue to be the person that I am. I will continue to be as honest as I can be. I will continue to balance the line between the K word and reality. I will. And, you know, let's face it, this indie wrestling, my goal has never been to be with the WWE. I don't expect to make $1 million in the wrestling business. I'm in the entertainment business, and I'm dedicated to indie entertainment. I am a person that is, you know, been bucking the system all my life, okay? I believe in independence, and I mean I believe in independent film, in independent music, independent wrestling. I am involved in the indie wrestling scene because it's wrestling like the way I grew up from the time I was a kid. 400 or 500 people getting together in a building, something off the beaten path, something that's not mainstream, where 400 or 500 people can come, forget their problems, all be part of a shared fantasy for a little while, and walk away from it. You know, that's why I don't understand picking it apart, overanalyzing it, people that spend their whole life dedicated to knocking it. That's why I've taken that battle on myself, and people have misunderstood it. Okay, it's just a fucking wrestling show, people. That's all it is. Okay, what do they expect is going to happen? That the CZW arena is going to open and God himself is going to come down and set off fireworks? I mean, what the fuck more can anybody do to entertain these people? You know, if you don't fucking like it, let it go. Let it go. I don't like fucking synchronized poodle swimming. I don't fucking, you know what I mean? Like, I don't get doggy dancing. I'm not a clog dancer.
I love
fucking
synchronized poodles on me.
Okay, that's cool. But you dig what I'm saying, you know? You dig what I'm saying.
So
yeah, maybe I got a lot of angst. Maybe I'm just firing off at the lip. You know what I mean? But for me to have survived, I've got more lives than a fucking cat. Okay, I'm not household name. I'm not rich. I'm in a struggle every day of my life. But you know what? It doesn't matter whether it was the music industry in Philadelphia, you know, and the influence that I had on people that became rock stars and what my contribution is there that many of them acknowledge openly. My film career, you know, I've got 3 movies coming out, people, this year on DVD already. The Cemetery, Revenge is Her Middle Name, and Theater Bizarre Wet Dreams, directed by Tom Savini, all busting soon to a DVD or theater near you here in 2010. My writing, One for the Fire, Legacy of Night of Living Dead, Rondo Award-winning documentary about the film Night of Living Dead, another one soon to be coming that I'm in the midst of now. I have achieved not the name of a household person, not $1 million, but always some kind of success at a moderate level of a recognition of my integrity, my dedication, my creativity, and my contributions, and that's from my peers. So when my peers think nothing of throwing me under a bus simply because I have the integrity to stand up, I'm not going to lie. It fucking hurts my feelings. I've not become bulletproof. I've not become jaded. I refuse to ever let my honesty, my innocence be taken from me. I will stay a child till the day I die because that is one thing, the one thing that no one can ever fucking steal from Billy Graham. So, you know, let the cards fall where they may. I don't care. If somebody can't see that I'm a fucking asset for all my efforts, then I guess the world is cursed to never see me near a wrestling ring again, I guess. I guess a lot of fans are going to be disappointed if just simply on the fact that I would stand up against a felon, a criminal, that I would finally protest not only him, but that I also would finally say, hey, wait a minute, when am I going to get a fucking fair shake as a person to where I don't got to fucking shed tears over this shit, you know? I mean, I've bled all over this fucking place, okay? And you know what? I'm not bragging, man. I can cut a promo with the best of them, and I'll tell you something else, man. I fucking worked with my friends to make Cult Fiction something to the fans, and not only that, I am the most hardcore fucking manager in the history of the fucking wrestling business, okay? There's no fucking manager that's not a worker that has ever fucking been as retarded and willing to do the shit that I'm willing to do, and that is my respect to the guys and what they do. It's my respect to the fans, and it's also just common sense realism to me that how are these guys out there killing each other, and then you've got some dude in a suit with a briefcase who somehow miraculously escapes unscathed time after time. It doesn't make sense to me. So that's the reason I've been willing to fucking, you know, have people taking electric staple guns to my bodies, 300-pound men crushing me in the concrete, dropping me through tables, and people throwing me off steel cages and putting cigarettes out through my fucking head, and on and on and on and on and on. Because, hey, to me, it should be required a required contribution as far as I'm concerned, or you don't fucking belong out there, you know. Certainly I'm not in any way equating myself to being a wrestler. I don't take one hundredth of what the guys and girls take. But you know, why should I not be willing to take an assumed risk? Why should I not be willing to you know, I already give my blood. I already give my sweat and my tears, you know?
Yeah.
So what's different about my blood? And so, there you have that part of it. But, I mean, the C word, the sickness and shit like that, like, I really, bottom line is, I really don't want to talk about it. I don't fucking care. I mean, you know, the bottom line for me is I've lived past my expiration point, and, you know, they'll all shit on me today, and then, you know, tomorrow when I'm gone, then, you know, I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure there's a few that'll really care, and I'm sure there'll be a whole lot of people fucking, you know, making speeches and reminiscing and being sentimental that fucking, you know, treated me like a fucking piece of shit while I was here and didn't give a fuck and didn't appreciate me whatsoever. So,
yeah.
I don't want their fucking false sympathy. They can shove it up their fucking ass.
One thing I wanted to put out there about yesterday's interview that I found really, really ironic, and you kind of mentioned it briefly, but, you know, for a guy to say that you're a tough guy over the phone, the height of his offense in the problem that you guys had was a threat he made over the phone.
You notice that, huh? You notice he supposedly apologized to me, but it was, I'm sorry I blew up. I'm sorry. And you heard me put him in the wall. No, motherfucker, you committed a felony. You threatened to kill me.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was the height of his offense.
You upset my family. You know, you upset my child. Okay, and, you know, that point, of course, was made last night about people's children. And so, okay, there's one. Let's cover that one. Okay, real quickly, real briefly, and I'm not going to go deep into it, but, you know, I threw it in his face about the situation with him attacking Thumbtack Jack.
Yeah.
And he had the balls, of course, and this has been put over for how many years now, that the reason he did it was that Thumbtack Jack had made a joke about putting his son in the oven. I'm going to put him in the oven. And how dare he? Well, you know, he didn't blurt out the fact that for 2 weeks, poor Alex was taking 2 weeks of incessant Nazi jokes, which, you know, there's some hillbilly fucking culture and worldliness to not understand that most German people, you know, the entire, you know, everyone in Germany, the country of Germany, the German people have worked how hard to shed the stigma of the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler. You know, they're our friends, they're our allies, okay? they were victims too, you know, and so there's no sensitivity about teasing him for 2 weeks about being a Nazi, okay? And he makes one joke that's directly related, going along tongue-in-cheek with the gimmick that was being shoved down his throat. And he says that's a just reason, and he's lying as usual, because the real reason he attacked Alex was not because of the joke. The real reason was he had a date with Destiny the following week because he was going to get in the ring on the opposite side of the ring from Cult Fiction, and I'm not going to name any names. I'm just going to say that it probably would have sold a lot of DVDs, okay? And I have no doubt that may have been why the match was booked, and he squirmed, and I give him credit, man. It was a very, while underhanded and criminal thing to do, and that poor TJ had to be the victim of it. It was a very intelligent bit of hustling at the 11th hour that he pulled to design a situation where he could get out of having to be in that ring and get the ass kicking that he deserved, because he knew that if he attacked TJ, who had never been at CZW before, was going to be the subject of a national TV taping for G4, knows that CZW does not run the kind of company that he himself runs, that CZW is not a climate of fear and intimidation. You know, for the most part, things, regardless of what you hear or whatever beefs anybody has at any given moment, CZW is very reasonably professional, you know, working environment. And, you know, it's not that, I'm not saying nobody's ever gotten, you know, hot with each other, or there haven't been a few, you know, harsh words exchanged, or guys wanting to go. It's men, man, okay? Passionate men, testosterone, adrenaline. Of course, once in a while, everybody's not going to get along. But, you know, comparing the professionalism of CZW in the same breath with Ian's company, it's not comparing hamburger to steak. It's comparing, you know the little burnt piece of hamburger that falls out of the pan and then falls under the fucking burner and then falls under the lid of the stove and you don't find it till 6 months later when you're cleaning it up finally. That's the piece of meat that is IWA Mid-South compared to the London boil that is CZW. Okay. It's not even night and day. It's Earth and a million galaxies as a comparison. I mean, so I know I'm babbling now. It's just the whole thing is frustrating. I mean, but anyway, just so you know, I know that in a little bit here, any minute, I think you're going to have some surprise callers coming in unless they let me down. But I want to cover a couple other things real quick.
All right.
First of all, okay. You know, just stop using my kindness as a weakness, Ian, and stop trying to use my respect for Judd Calvin as a weapon, you know, to once again manipulate and control, because it's not going to work. Your son knows that I'm his friend and that I care about him, and that if I can ever help him, he's got it. That's a matter of public record. I've said it over and over again. He knows it. I know it. There's enough said about that, so stop trying to throw your son in my face. It already hurts my feelings enough, the situation. Another thing I want to say something about really quickly is I'm not even going to get into the fact that anybody that doesn't believe that he assaulted Mickey ruthlessly is a moron. What I think of, I don't care if she is one of the toughest women, you know, that you're ever going to meet. I don't think that there's any reasonable man that can justify what he did. He distorted the story of what actually happened. That's not for me to get into all the details, but I will say this, as far as his and I'm not talking about foul language, I'm talking about his vulgar, crass lie and insinuation that he in some way or another was intimate with Mickey, as hard for it is to, for anybody to believe, okay, and is despicable. It might, you know, he got the cheap pop. He got the cheap pop for dropping a dirty sexual innuendo. And I'll tell you something, it's very simple. He is the cause of those rumors. He is the one that made it up, and why did he do it? So he would look like a macho man to all the boys in the back, like a 12-year-old who got his first fucking blowjob or something, making it up because he this is what he needs to feed his ego. Mickey would not fuck that guy if he was the fucking goddamn last fucking dick on this fucking earth. Just please, look at the man. I don't care who believes it, and it's a very low road and a foul thing, and as Jerry Wiseman pointed, there could be a lot of reasons why you would make something up so despicable. And as far as swallowing loads go, like, Ian, man, you fucking choke the load, dude. You choke the load every time you fucking open your mouth. And if we're going to talk about motherfuckers sucking dick, man, you know, there's some other stories about Ian Rotten that might come out, you know, as time goes by. I can't make claims, but I'm just telling you, I've heard some stories, and Ian, you might not want to point a finger when it comes to sucking a fucking dick, dude. That's all I got to say. You know, because there's some stories about you back in the ECW days and about who's sucking dick. But
I got to interrupt real quick. We do have a caller. I'd like to welcome...
Somebody's not letting me down here. It's awesome.
I'd like to welcome to the show independent legend and lead trainer of the Rage Dojo, American Kickboxer.
Guys, how's everybody doing? Hey, Billy, what's up, man?
Yo, what is up, my brother, man? I am very, very pleased and very, very happy that you could join us here right now, man.
Speaking of said person having a dick on their breath, man, I've got a really, really cool joke that goes with that, man.
Awesome.
And it was Bull Payne used to have this weird fascination with, you know, sticking different objects in his ass around the locker room just to kind of rib the boys and shit like that. And, well, Bull had one of Ian's Sharpie markers hanging out of his penis. And as before John came back into the dressing room, Bull puts the marker back down on the desk. And, of course, the first thing that John did was pick up the marker and throw it in his mouth. So having dick breath, there might be some substance to that. So.
So in other words, he sucked Bull's dick not only metaphorically but by proxy.
Yeah, completely.
Potentially a dozen or so of Bull's unborn children may have very well swam down Ian's esophagus, is what you've done.
This is possible.
Oh,
you know what? I never felt sorry for sperm before until this moment. Even sperm does not deserve to go there.
Wow.
So we figure we bring you on. Maybe you had some more stories and you know, experiences with the topic at hand.
Can I say something real quick, man? Listen, man, I just want to say, like, Frank, so much for coming on, man, Kickboxer, and like,
absolutely.
You know, Frank and I only met a couple years ago at CZW, and, you know, obviously I was a fan of his work, had seen what he had done. I know what he's responsible for in the business. You know, a person that I have a lot of respect for, and, you know, just since then, you know, been a friend, a bro, and another straight up person, a kindred spirit of mine, and someone who just from the minute he met me, just kind of like took me aback because he flattered me in ways that I wasn't expecting. I didn't even know he knew who I was, and I just want to thank him, man, in front of everybody, for like sometimes you need to hear it, you know. And
yeah, it was my pleasure, man. And what a lot of people don't understand is kind of the kindred spirit that we both share in John Trudell. So,
oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. One of my biggest influences, yeah.
Give a shout for John Trudell. Anybody that gets a chance to go on YouTube, check out John Trudell. He's kind of the closest thing that I follow to a spiritual guide. I'm a spiritual person, not a religious person. So that was one of the connecting points that we have. And it's kind of a great respect to find somebody who kind of thinks on that different level, because you've got to understand that in all reality, there's a thin line between genius and insanity, and the true geniuses have to be tightrope walkers, you understand. So.
Absolutely. And John Trudell, another thing to throw in so people out, who is this guy? A member of the original American Indian Movement, was at the Wounded Knee occupation in the 70s, a big influence on me. I've had the pleasure of meeting John before, my brother. Of course, he also puts out albums with his music and spoken word.
Also part of the Alcatraz occupation.
Absolutely, and also, of course, you can see him as an actor in the film Thunderheart with Val Kilmer that's loosely based, a fictional film based loosely on real events. And, yeah, check out John's albums, man. Check out, go on to YouTube, man, hit a search on John Trudell and open up your mind and let someone drop some knowledge on you people. And these, of course, are real things that concern us all in this world. And,
you see, this is the beauty of everything, you see, because in the negativity that was brought around and everything else and the negative situations, if we can shine a little bit of positivity with the attention that we've got from people right now, then maybe we're actually doing a service, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny because when the shit, you know, became public between me and Ian, you know, we all know that, you know, part of my offensive was to go on these message boards and explain that I will tell you this, when I said, and maybe I might even, maybe somebody up there, Cataragus, man, some of those res dogs up there, Louis Snyder, some of you guys, man, you might want to call in the show later on here, man. I'd love to get you on the line. So I got some of my brothers back me up here. But, I mean, anybody that thinks, first of all, there's no such thing as Indian voodoo. And even if I use language to as such just to get a reaction and cause, you know, cause and effect, I did not have a curse put on Ian Rotten, but I absolutely did go to some very powerful women, medicine people, and I had ceremonies of protection done that were directed to contain Ian Rotten and directed to protect all those that he was doing harm against. And, you know, it's easy to make light of me. It is easy to make racially slanted jokes and make jokes about Tonto and peace pipes and fake Indian voodoo bullshit. But my boys up there in the Nations will tell you, and anybody that has any valid firsthand experience will tell you, that these are very old and powerful things, that making light of them is not going to negate the fact that they're real. And you heard me confront John last night and tell him, bro, you know it's real. You know it. You wake up every night and you know it. And you didn't hear him offer any verbal contradiction to what I'm saying. And I'm not taking credit for it, but it just seems to be the luckiest coincidence for putting me over, doesn't it? Putting myself over, the big attention whore that I'm accused of being. And believe me, people, I get plenty of attention. This is just the shit that I do. So if I'm wrong for, you know, playing my character and skirting this tightrope that Frank's talking about to keep my profile and keep our brand name alive, you know, fucking sue me. But the bottom line is, what a convenient coincidence it was that after 12, 13 years of Ian assaulting, possibly raping, abusing, thieving, lying, physically taking advantage of people, and going on and on and on, and no end to it, what a coincidence it was that once those ceremonies of protection were done, that is when Ian's shit just all of a sudden fell the fuck apart. I mean, what a convenient coincidence that is.
But you understand that it's completely, you know, if you live by bad medicine, really and truly, you know, the other saying, if you live by the sword or karma or whatever convenient way you want to put it, you know. But
yep.
now that we've got this spotlight, and we've got this attention, Billy, What would be the end game here? What would be the striking point or the end results that you're trying to accomplish? Because I can tell you what I did, okay? And
yeah,
my point
I
understood that there was another show going on, I had students of mine that contacted me, and I straight up let them know the Rage Dojo is the closest thing that I have to a union, a brotherhood, and Bull Payne is kind of the godfather of that. So if you strike my brother, you strike me, you know.
All right.
So,
hallelujah, man.
And as I said to my guys, I'd really prefer that you didn't go to work there because, you know, this is my family. I'm an old street kid, man. I've been on my own since I was 14 years old. Man.
Me too, brother. Same exact age. 14 years old, exact same age. I could wax a minute on what you just said and add to that that, you know, there's some people. Now, I first met JC in March or April of 2005. I had known of him for a couple of years, of course, through my bros and everything, but I am in by no means purporting that in that time period we were close like friends. When he had his difficulty and he had been sent away for 2 years, I did offer what kind of moral support and things that I could. And then, of course, in December of 2009, a decision was made that was not strictly based on a wrestling angle, but some more practicality having to do with his welfare and my genuineness as a person and as a responsible person that would kind of look out for him and care for him and try to help him get back on the right track. That's the truth. And
right.
in that time, there's people recently in the business that have actually accused me of making a bigger deal out of my friendship with JC than it was. That, you know, we weren't tight that long. So, in other words, basically accusing me of trying to exploit my friend's tragedy and put it over that we were closer than we really were. And I'm going to tell you that the closeness of a friendship is not judged in terms of its longevity. Nothing lasts forever, not even the rocks. And Joe will back me up on this, and because, you know, we had become very, very, very close. Very early on in it, he was having some difficulties, and I was on him like a madman, you know, and reprimanding him and trying to, you know, whip him into shape the best way that I knew how, tough love, understanding, talking, counseling, and, you know, talks with his father very early on who asked me to take responsibility and help him and be a brother, an uncle, a mentor, and outright be act as if I was his father when Joe was not around, and that was all that I can do, and I promised Joe that I would. And really, really what was a bitter pill to swallow was that after JC's passing, when Joe talked to me, his sister, his brother, his family, his cousins, I knew that we had become really, really close because of many interactions, some of them that we could talk about tonight. But when his family, when his father came to me after his passing and told me the things that JC was saying to them about me and about our relationship and how important I had become to him and how real I was to him and how much he loved me. I mean, it was bittersweet, you know what I mean? To know that he had been touched by me the same way I had been touched by him, and I hugged. There I go with setting up every wise ass in the world, you know, for the, you know, homosexual innuendos. I'm talking about in a spiritual and emotional and you know, personal level. And, you know, I will never, ever, for as many people as I lose, I will never, ever get over it. I will never heal from it. I will never be able to put the fact that destiny had some kind of hand. I touched on it in my rage last night, but, you know, JC had really been pretty much, for the most part, you know, he had his moments where he was slipping, but he had been trying so hard to keep his shit straight for that couple months before TOD. And he came to me that day and said, Billy, I really, you know, can we go off and take a walk? I want to talk to you. And I said, sure, bro. And we took a walk way back there under the backside of DJ's property under the trees. And I said, what's up, man? And he told me, he said, listen, he goes, I'm really upset about Mike passing away. And, you know, I've been trying really hard and I think I've got this thing licked. He goes, but I want to make sure. He goes, so I've been thinking about checking myself into a rehab for 2 months and making sure that I've got my problem beat. And I said, well, damn, dude, fucking A, you are doing great, and I'm proud of you, and awesome, like, good job, do it, you know. And he said, well, no. He said, I'm asking you if it's okay with you. And I mean, I just was stunned. I'm like, what do you mean you're asking me if it's okay with me? You know, and he said, because, you know, we have this whole thing going on right now. We've got the angle with Cult Fiction, the feud with the Suicide Kings. You know, CZW is dependent on us. Everybody's dependent on each other. I don't want to let the guys down. I don't want to let you down. I don't want to let our bros down. I don't want to let Drake and them down. I don't want to let the company down. I don't want to let the fans down. And I said, are you fucking kidding me, bro? Fuck that. I said, your back is hurt. You know, take care of you. I said, for me, for you to have been locked up against your will for 2 years, and then to be free for 6 months, and now to tell me that you are voluntarily going to put, in effect, lock yourself up again, I said, that is a strength that I not only respect, but I can't even comprehend it because I know I'm not that strong. I said, I love you, bro. Take care of you. I can't wait for you to come back, and we're going to tear this shit up, you know? And, you know, it's a real weird thing with this, you know, male affection. People get put aback. I'm very confident in who I am and my heterosexuality, and displays of affection from me to males are not something that make me uptight. As we know, many men are not used to such things. And there was two, it was after I had the talk in March in Indianapolis with Joe. I had a talk with JC and at the end of that show that night, and right before we left, I grabbed him and I hugged him. He hugged me, and then all of a sudden I kissed him on the cheek, and he kind of leaned back and looked at me like, what the fuck, dude? You're kissing me, you know? I mean, like, his screwy look on his face. And he just kind of smiled and, you know, shook his head and walked away. Well, you know, at TOD, when we went off for our talk after the show, I'll see you in a couple months, you know, he grabbed me, I grabbed him, we hugged each other. I said, I love you, bro. He said, I love you, too. And I gave him a kiss on the cheek, and he gave me one back and smiled from ear to ear. And I had no idea, you know, obviously at that time, that that was the last time that I ever saw him again. But I'm glad it happened. And so for anybody, you know, these motherfuckers don't even want to talk about it, Frank. You know, yeah. I was expected, you know, people accusing me of trying to fucking turn it into a fucking angle because I was expected to walk into a fucking ring in front of the fans in a mom-and-pop business and play the fucking heel and not even acknowledge his fucking passing. And in my opinion, yeah, I'm being fucking punished for refusing to toe that line right now. And that's just my honest opinion. And I'm being fucking punished for it. Because I had the fucking integrity to go with my gut and say, how the fuck can I walk out in front of these people and act like nothing's happened? Because it did. We lost our fucking brother, man. I lost my fucking friend. And I feel like I failed. Now I gotta listen to fucking motherfuckers. And I know they're confused, and why couldn't they think, with all the bad shit they hear, how the fuck are they going to believe anything but the lowest possibility? But the truth of the matter is, he was in a rehab for 60 days, and he died a day and a half after he got out, after proposing to his girl and her accepting, after him telling his father that he was only going to do this shit for a couple more years, and then he was going to get a house and start a family. He wasn't fucking up anymore, man. The guy had turned his life around. And I just wish that fucking people could fucking be human and compassionate enough to stop it, to stop fucking running his name through the dirt, to fucking care about his father and his brothers and his sisters and his cousin and his girl and his friends. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Billy, I mean, you did everything you possibly could for JC, and, you know, the people who really matter to love JC all know that. And you're going to find haters on any topic, and you really can't dwell on it, bro, because you know what JC meant to you, and you know what you meant to him.
They cannot be that bad. They've got to have some humanity somewhere behind all this bullshit of playing a game on the internet. And I'm telling every one of you fuckers, I don't care if you like me, if you think I'm a fucking attention whore and a mark for my fucking self, I swear on my daughter's life, I swear on everything that I hold sacred, I swear on my brothers, man, at the Seneca Nation, I swear to you, JC did not die of a drug overdose. He didn't. There would be no... If he did, I'd be the first one admitting it. Because there would be no honor. It would be minimalizing his existence, his reality. It's a lie. I don't have any reason to fucking lie. I don't have anything to gain. There is nobody for me to protect. It's quite the opposite, by being honest. It's not only not protected anybody, it's just opened us all up to more mockery, more ridicule, more heartache.
Well, I think that the other thing is until somebody has actually had to wear somebody else's shoes maybe for a day, you understand, that you can never tell me what my path has been like or anything like that until you've walked in my shoes. So, yeah. I knew JC since he was a kid, literally since he was a kid. So that's a wound that's not going to heal for a while. So
it's not going to ever heal for me, bro. Ever.
Yeah.
Ever. And then brothers. Don't even want to talk about it. I'm a fucking pariah because I expect that some people close to the situation might be able to enter into a fucking dialogue, you know?
Well, sure, and I think that's where maybe it's if people don't understand where to go with that dialogue at this point. You know what I mean? Okay, we've got this discussion open, okay, and we've all got these feelings. Okay, now what do we do with these feelings? Is what my thought process is. Okay.
Well, I don't know, Frank. Maybe you can do more because you got the respect, and for some reason, I don't got any. You know, I don't. Not in a fucking locker room. I don't. You know, me and my bros. You know what? Anybody that has fucking ever put on a fucking Cult Fiction shirt, every single one of them respects me. The rest, you know, hit or miss, because it's obvious, man, that there's people shaking my hand and saying, yeah, 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 and then I walk away and they're fucking laughing at me. If they're not laughing at me, they're sticking a knife in my fucking back.
But in all reality, let's be honest now. If I was to get hurt, or any one of my kids to get hurt doing this, how many of those people are literally going to try to help pay my bills or to make sure that my kids are fed? So it's all
You know who would? I'll tell you who, man. The dragons would, man.
I
want to thank them so much because, you know, another part of this for me was that at the 11th hour, I had to cancel going to JC's funeral and his service because I was tipped off that Fuckface was going to show up there. Yeah. And with my beliefs, and Frank, you understand this, that, you know, to an Indian person, the Haudenosaunee people have a saying, it's a philosophy and it's a way of life, which is Ganagahil. Ganagahil is the good mind. Okay, that means that you have to keep your own thoughts good. You have to
or you're part of the problem. So in other words, for me to go with JC's family when they're trying to lay him to rest and have Ian, my mortal enemy, show up on the same ground, there was no way that I could invent good conscience. There was no way I was going to be able to quell my bad feelings, and I had no doubt he probably would have came after me right there, right in front of his family over this bullshit. And so I tried to take the high road that I could, and I did the hardest thing I ever did, and I didn't go. And then subsequently, of course, what went down with him showing up and his bullshit, you know, I'm glad I didn't. But then
yes, for trans, I think it was.
And then what happened was I was on December 27th, 2010, I was in Bardstown. Cage Cutler, I'd like to thank, and his girlfriend, a wrestler I'd never met, young guy, came and picked me up in Louisville at a friend's house, took me out to Bardstown, and I went out to JC's grave and his mother's grave. And, you know, I got to, you know, say my prayers and leave some tobacco, sing a song, and you know, be there with him, and of course was blubbering the same way I am now. And, you know, the headstone, the memorial that Drake and the guys, you know, worked so hard, everybody that went out and put their bodies on the line and worked so hard to promote that show, to pay for that, I mean, it's so beautiful, and it's such an awesome memorial to him. And whether it means anything coming for me or not, I personally appreciate so much that they did that for him, you know. And it was as beautiful as could be. And I just could not accept, standing there, I could not accept that bro was there on the ground in front of me. I couldn't.
Yep.
I can't. I keep thinking I'm going to wake up and, you know, we won't be interrupted. And that somebody that was on the verge of everything coming together for him, I mean, it makes you doubt everything there is, man. Like, why even try? Why even try when you see somebody, you know, that tried so hard? You know, somebody that nobody that ever met or knew him or ever crossed his path, a rare individual I've never known in this world. Because nobody, I can't say this for me, I can't say it for you, Frank, I can't say it for you, Jay, I swear to God, no one has a single bad word to say about this person ever.
Absolutely not.
And so how did he fail? His life wasn't a failure. It wasn't a tragedy, man. It was a triumph. Because you know what? To come into this world like a shooting star, and to touch so many people's lives and have nobody able to say anything bad about you except a bunch of strangers taking pot shots, to me, that is not a failure or a tragedy. It's a success and it's a triumph. And it always will be to me.
I think David Allan Coe stated it so, so wisely, and we had these words on the wall of the gym, and it's the chorus of the ride. And it says, Drifter, can you make folks cry when you play and sing? Have you paid your dues? Can you moan the blues? Can you bend those guitar strings? Boy, can you make folks feel what you feel inside? Because if you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. Is that not pro wrestling? I mean, really?
Yeah. Fuck yeah. True that. Hey, I don't know. I just want to mention, you got another caller like hanging on the line, Jay?
Yeah, we do actually.
You better get him. I don't want to.
Hey
lose
guys,
him
real quick, let me.
Frank,
jump
stay
off
with
here.
Us. Frank, oh, okay. Shit, I was hoping you'd stay with us.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. I've got a couple other things going on over here, man. Got a little one getting ready to go to the bed. Should
say
actually
hi to little
be
one for Uncle
right
Billy.
Now. Yeah, will
okay.
do.
Say
will
hi.
Do. Real quick, let me get a plug in, guys. Keep your thoughts,
sure.
prayers with my boys, Drake Younger. He's over in Japan right now. He's Rage
yep.
Dojo all the way.
Absolutely.
With all the bullshit that's going on in Japan right now.
Keep those people in prayer.
Send my love out there. Yeah. Send my love out there to my, he's my son, and really worried about him. So, that, and just check out the Rage Dojo. We've got a new gym set up in Woodville Mall. And, Billy, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. You've got the spotlight now, my friend. Do something.
Thank you for coming on,
hey, Frank.
You know what I mean? You've got this attention now. So you do with it what you can now. Okay, my friend?
Frank,
yeah.
I love you, brother.
All right, love you guys too, man. You guys be safe, all right?
Yeah, thank you, man.
Peace, brother.
All right.
Let's
what we have on the line right now, and I'd like him to come on and tell his story about a certain situation, and that is one Mike Levy.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, Mike?
Mike, it's your buddy,
hey,
Billy. What's up, brother?
Not much, man.
Thanks for taking me up on this, invite, and thank you for providing me with an opportunity to talk to you and air this shit, man to man in front of the whole world. So we can get past this shit too, okay? For real, man. Because, very obviously, it's something that I'm going to be ashamed of and never going to be able to shuck for the rest of my life, no matter how many times I apologize to you, no matter how many times I try to be honest and forthcoming and just really, really explain honestly where I was at from minute to minute, from day to day, month to month, my actions. I'm trying to be as honest about it and open as I can, and the obvious reasons that people don't want to believe me, people want to think I'm full of shit. And the first thing, can you please first of all tell them that yes, that I definitely reached out to you long already, and tried to make my amends with you. I mean,
yeah, you called me. So you called me in about the CZW fan, the CZW message or something, and apologize for it.
Can I say something about this before Mike even takes his side?
You say a lot, Bill, but sure.
No, I mean, because honestly, this is the God's honest truth, and this is what I know. And then Mike, let me spill this, and if I've got something wrong, then correct me and educate me. Okay.
Okay.
Early on in this thing, okay, there was a lot of secrecy going on for obvious reasons. I mean, we got to keep some shit, on the down low. It is the fucking wrestling business, okay? You're not supposed to be running around telling the whole world what's going to happen or anything like that. In the midst of that secrecy, I did walk into a room where I wasn't supposed to be, overheard some talks going on. So from what I understood and what I overheard that I wasn't supposed to hear, there was a planning of what was supposed to occur, whether you were privy to it or not, that I don't know, and I'd like to find out in a minute here, but that there was going to be this work occurring, okay? Now, the next part where it picks up for me is I'm standing there with Dustin, CJ Otis, and Sabu on the porch on the steps of the fucking bowling alley, watching you have this match. And then I start to see Fuckface running around, inciting people, complaining about what's going on, freaking out. And because in all that confusion, I mean, the mind is a fucking dangerous thing. And so, basically the bottom line is I began to believe what I was hearing as it was being explained to me, what I'm seeing. And I've said it this way in the last couple of days. I've never, ever in my life been more confused about what the fuck was really going on. And I do know for a fact that people in the locker room were worked. That's why I've never had anything bad to say about any of the individuals that physically got involved at the end of it, because I know that we were all worked like as if something was real. And after the fact, when the match was over, I'll never forget this, that when you came in out of the ring, Ian grabbed Toby and me and said, Billy, Toby, you guys, he stopped you from going in. You were trying to go in the locker room where your bag is and everything. You're exhausted from what just happened.
you were smiling, okay, which maybe you're just a nice guy and you got to do a match, you know, and you're tough, obviously. And so he stopped you and said, you can't go in there. And he said, Toby and Billy, you stay here with him and make sure he's cool because these guys want to kill him. And then next thing I know, at some point you went and got yourself cleaned up and you showed back up and you were still cool and you were still in a good frame of mind. And then I remember me and you over by a bench over there by the pool tables or the bathrooms or whatever. And I said, bro, man, if I was you, man, I'd get the fuck out of here. Because I was hearing people while you were gone, motherfuckers were making threats. You know what I mean? And I was
I was serious.
You do remember me saying that I was worried about you.
Yeah, I do remember you saying that.
And I sincerely was worried for your safety. You know what I mean? Now, of course, then in the days that followed, you know, the work was put on me even more, and to the point where I got so confused that I actually thought you had worked me, you know what I mean? And, you know, me, it was one, you know, I'm always opinionated, I always come out, I don't sit on a fence, but, you know, that's when I made the blunderous error of my life to come out and vehemently defend that this entire thing was a work. And, you know, I since then have come to not believe that the entire thing was a work. And I've made as many apologies as I can. And, bro, I know that you know that I am absolutely fucking sincere. And I'm so sorry for any confusion I caused. I never meant to hurt you. I think you're a good guy, man. I hope that you have success in this business. If you can get through that, I mean... And that's basically what I have to say. And then now it's you. I want to hear, you know, what you have to say because I'm still fucking confused.
So everybody knows about the infamous incident, and we would like to hear out of your mouth your version of what actually happened.
Okay. My friend, got me to go to the show, and I guess somebody posted my match on the internet. That's what I gather. And the women's tournament, people didn't show up. So... it was I'm trying to think his name, the guy who owns SmartMark. My brain's at a point, but he came out and asked me to meet with Ian.
Right. Mike asked you. Yeah.
Mike Burns, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Burns, that's it. Yeah, I usually know if he's blank, you know. But he goes to meet with Ian, and Ian's like, we can put you in a match with Nikki, whatever. So I agreed to do it, mainly because my friend wanted to say I was a bitch, but I wasn't. That's honestly the truth why I did. then we go there, and we, plan out a match, and, I don't remember everything we planned out, but I remember we planned out, not to go to the weapons first thing, anybody if you do a match, you know, you don't really, just start flushing these up to their face for first fucking move, you know, which is the first thing you did. The first thing she did was, when it came out, I guess they said you could see, Ian whisper something to her or something. The whole match we had planned, she didn't do none of it. Fucking none of it. And I'm I'm actually trying to work this as best I can with somebody kicking me in the face trying to fucking kill me. Now I see people running out outside, fucking stirring shit, so I can't really... fucked if I am, or fucked if I'm not, you know, because, if I would actually really fight the girl, I wouldn't get the shit killed. I wouldn't get me killed. So I tried not to fucking do anything so I wouldn't get killed, which they end up attacking me any fucking way, you know? So I was fucking no matter what I did, you know? We had a match, she didn't do none of the fucking match. Then, the truth was, when the attack happened, Tank ran in, he was talking kind of calm or something. And he was like, we're going to do the curb stomp like he did to the ref or something. I didn't see the people flying off the top rope. And after the first curb stomp, I don't remember shit until I was backstage. Really, I was backstage, and I was, dizzy, and my fucking eyes were clearing up. Then I was that's why I remember shit. So, the whole, they said where I got stomped in the head, and I rise back up because I can see where I wasn't selling shit. I was pretty much fucking unconscious. I was moving, I didn't know where the fuck I was. That's really the truth about it. But, yeah, it was a total fucking shoot. It was set up with bullshit. That's really the truth.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. Now, can I ask you a question? With everything that's happened since then, do you have it in your person to understand? I mean, you've got to be aware of the shit that's went down since with Mickey. You've got to know a little bit of the background and everything like that. You know what I mean? So, I mean, do you have it in you to understand that she's just another person that Ian manipulated and basically brainwashed? You know, and you know, is there peace with you and her? Can you forgive her for that she was being exploited in the same way that the rest of us were? I don't think that if you met Mickey today and the situation was the same, I think that you'd see a different person, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't really know that much. I can tell you, like, when I went backstage, the only one that was cussing and screaming at me was Mickey. Like,
right.
He was still screaming at me and, like, being evil. Like, I don't really care for her. I mean, like, you know, like, because it feels like, you know, you could say, like, Ian was the one who brainwashed her, but I don't get brainwashed like that, you know? Because,
yeah.
Like, when Ian's trying to call me, like, literally, like, 3 days after the show, he's trying to call me and work an angle and do all this shit. It's
yeah,
like,
book you. I remember all that. Book you. Yeah, he was going to book you against. He was going to book
gonna
you
book
against.
Me and he's going to work an angle and shit.
He was
going to
put
like,
you
was,
against. He was going to have. Like, for those that don't know, I'll spill that one, Mike. It's like he was going to have you come in and get your ass kicked by brain damage, get your ass kicked by Necro, claiming that this was all going to lead up to finally he gets you in the ring and then you go over on him. That's what he told me. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think it was all just to cover up because the police were investigating it, and yeah.
Well, like, I think if I would have went, he would have probably used me to cover his ass so he wouldn't look like a total shithead. But I was like,
yeah.
I wasn't stupid enough to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, my deal is, like, because he's just proven that he is an evil piece of shit, and I don't want to work for an evil piece of shit. I mean, even though it would have, like, helped get my name out there, I don't want to work for an evil piece of shit. He's a piece of shit.
Well, you know what, Mike, man? You might listen, take this for what it's worth, man. You might not be Tully Blanchard, man, but that decision on your part just made you stand out as far as having integrity above 95% of the motherfuckers ever to lace up a pair of boots, bro. Okay? That is a sincere compliment because there's not too many ways, as we all know, in the indie wrestling business these days, to get yourself out there, and certainly Ian is a guy that's provided a fucking platform for you. So for you to say no and realize that you were being manipulated and to realize that you didn't need to do it that way and to stick by your guns, man, I give you mad props and mad respect, man. And to me, you're beyond the better man. You are a man, and you're a person that people should respect for that, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you took what you took and came back, he would continue to push the envelope until you didn't move.
I can explain why I came back, too, actually. There's two reasons I came back. One is because I was locked unconscious. So, like, it wasn't really there. So all the cussing and him, like, burying the shit out of me, like, I don't remember it. Like, I didn't know it happened. So for all I know, I did fuck up to begin with because I didn't know. Because I was, like, I had a 400-pound guy jump on my head. I didn't remember shit.
Well, that at least explains to me the fact of why what I at one point said was a stupid smile on your face, and I apologize for that too.
It was because I
was just like, wait a minute, the guy is not upset. He's smiling. He's grinning from ear to ear. And he's trying to hang around like nothing happened. So it must be cool. Like what was I supposed to think? You know, but knowing that you were not fucking silly, now that explains it. So I'm a dumbass,
yeah.
Man.
I came, like, one of the reasons I came back is because, like, I don't know, I guess pride, because I didn't want to be like, look, we ran that pussy off, so I came back. Like, I knew there was a chance they was going to try to kill me or some shit, but I was like, I'm going to be a fucking man, I'm going to come back and fuck it, you know? They're not running me off, basically. I mean, when I came back, I pretty much knew I was never going to work for them, or, like, once I left, it was the last time I was ever going to go there, but... You know, plus I guess I was curious to see what other people would say and shit. And I'm like, throw out like somebody who was like really fucking cool, which was Die Hard. But everybody hates Die Hard, but Die Hard is honest as shit. Like, Die Hard told me all this shit about Ian and told me all this shit about this shit I had no idea went on, and Die Hard was, like, really fucking cool, so, like, and, you know, really, like, took up for me.
I'm just glad that you remember and you verify that I did, me and Toby were watching your back. You know what, I know that there was other people like Sabu and CJ Otis that were watching your back and walked off in disgust and had a private discussion with a couple of us about what had happened. And we were trying to, like, what the fuck? We were standing, like, what happened? We all didn't know. Like, what just happened? Who's being worked? What was real? What wasn't? And none of us could make heads or tails of it. And, you know, I'm just glad you remember me when you came back telling you and saying, hey, bro, man, like, really, man, you got to get the fuck out of here. I'm worried, man. I'm scared for you. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I was legitimately scared for your safety after the fact, you know, because I thought, man, that shit out there isn't nothing. We know what this guy's about. And
yeah, I didn't really know Toby, like, where you know, explaining to me Toby was, like, watching me. Like, I didn't really know he was watching me, but he was, like, hanging out with me, so it does make sense. Yeah. Like,
I'm just glad you remember me. So I'm just glad you remember me and you said that tonight, that I did tell you that, man, because I was so scared for you, dude. And bottom line is, hey, a little bit scared for myself, too, for even fucking going against the grain at that moment. I mean, you know, and then, yeah, a week of fucking him on the phone with me trying to, you know, and I admit it, Mr. Cult Leader here got fucking culted. I got fucking, well, I didn't drink no fucking Kool-Aid, but whatever that fucking evil rotten power is, man, it's, I touched on that last night, man. He's got some skills,
yeah.
Boy, with people that are weird and fucking beyond Jim Jones-like. And
I could tell there was a tension in the locker room, like, where it seemed like Ian and his guys and the CZW guys were, like, on total different teams, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
I could
tell that.
Yeah.
Like, Nick Gage came up to me and talked to me. Which I saw Nick on a few shows, and he's, like, cool as shit. But it's, I had
another
Doc,
guy,
wait,
another
what
guy who's in our prayers tonight. Yeah, another guy who's in our prayers tonight.
One of the guys I remember talking to me was Rolling Hard. And, like,
oh, man, love the man. What a sweetheart, man.
Yeah, but, like, what I was going to explain, because he was, like, involved in that attack, which I don't remember. He didn't remember that time, but he told me, kind of told me what was going on and told me that, like, basically, they did this to him. They attacked him, like, because he threw a bad chair shot, and they jumped him, and that they were doing it to me, and paying dues, and blah, 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 like, it, like, justifying it. You know, I'm not, like, putting him down or nothing, though, but, like, you could tell that he was, like, I want to say he was brainwashed by him. You could tell he was, you know? And I was like, you know, it wasn't cool, you know?
Well,
and,
I think that, unfortunately, that, you know, I got to be friends with Roland there for the last 6 months of his life, and I think that, and now that I've spilled the beans about me, I guess people can understand why, since I have the C word, why Roland and his wife and me bonded because of his situation, and I think that the bottom line is that Roland maybe figured it out, but he figured it out a bit too late, you know, and just another person.
Yeah.
Whose tragedy that Ian has exploited and
you
stolen.
Could tell he was, you could tell he was a good guy, but I don't know. See, that's the one I was talking to Donald. I realized that a lot of these big, really tough, badass, bloody, hardcore men were kind of like, I don't want to say like pussies, kind of pussies. Like, when it comes to like standing up for themselves, they wouldn't do it, you know? And,
listen,
you know,
bro, you know what? 100-some years of the business conditioning people to be out only for themselves, to undermine men acting like real men and having honor among men. I mean, it's considered detrimental to the business, to the people that run the show. They don't want anybody to have any bonds. And that's another reason why Cult Fiction is resented, because the brotherhood is fucking real, and it's like, wow, these guys are too big for their britches. Wow, these guys, they won't just do what they're told. If they don't think something is right or they don't think it makes sense, they're going to protest, and they're going to not go along with it. They're going to, you know, Billy's not going to go out and ignore his friend's death. He's not going to do what I say, so he's fucking a detriment, you know, I've seen it, and I talked about the same thing you were saying, Mike, last night, that I don't know what it is. I don't know how to explain it, but I've watched the toughest men that I know that are the most feared, the ones that the fans go, that guy's a badass, and I've watched them one after the other cave into this guy. And like I said last night, just for some reason, a guy that these guys do not know how to say no to. And I said last night, I don't know if it's because they feel that they're beholden to him, that they owe him something. Or, I suspect it's something a lot more, it's something more deep and more subconscious and more psychological than I'm not a professional. I can't put a definition on it, or I can't, it's inexplicable to me, you know, what that real hold is that he has, you know. So how's your career going right now? What are you doing? Where are you working? Are you still,
I'm still working. I work out in North Carolina all the time. We have, my buddy has a fan. We're, running three shows a week. I mean, not three shows a week. We're running three shows a month. We're doing pretty good. We're drawing pretty decent. I mean, we're not drawing like CCW. We're drawing, better than IWE himself.
Well, amen.
You know, about 20, 25 people you got?
Like 100,
but
yeah, 100.
Okay.
Much better.
Yeah, so you're drawing like 10 times what they are, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good up here.
A minute, that's right. They don't draw anybody because they don't run shows anymore. I forgot.
I saw about 10 people in a Taco Bell last week, so I beg to differ.
Which, by the way, another big bombshell.
I have a crappy factory job, but it's better in Taco Bell, right?
Yep. Hey, check this out, man. For everybody that thinks Ian got fired at Taco Bell, here's a scoop for you. When it spilled on CZW fans which Taco Bell he was working at, that Taco Bell was barraged with, prank phone calls and all this other shit, right? Well, he didn't get fired. What happened is they transferred him to another Taco Bell so that no one would know where he was, because it was like one of those skirty issues, like how do they fire a guy whose work they're happy with because wrestling fans are making prank phone calls. So they just transferred him to another Taco Bell and said, don't let anyone find out where you're at. I don't know if he wears like a disguise or, you know.
Can you imagine the executive meeting in the Taco Bell to transfer this guy for the prank phone call?
It's beyond
ludicrous.
It's surrealistic, you know what I mean? All I know, man, is I wouldn't stoop to calling up the Taco Bell. I figured, okay, cool, he's out of the wrestling business, his kids need to eat. But I'll tell you one thing, man, I'd like to know what Taco Bell it is, because the idea of possibly ingesting something that he put his fucking slimy fucking Hep C fucking hands on, you know, is hard. That's a horror movie to me. Fuck Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a fucking beef and chorizo made by fucking Ian Rotten. I'd rather take Leatherface with the fucking chainsaw than take that.
I don't think I would eat what he makes.
I haven't eaten in Taco Bell since I heard that he works in one.
I'm 1,000 miles away, so I'm safe.
I'm fucking running away from the fucking border, not to it, man.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad to hear, you're doing good, and I'm glad to finally hear it, straight from you, because, and once again, man, thanks for being a bigger man and thanks for forgiving me. I appreciate it, man. Like I said, I'm still working on that thing with the money for that thing we talked about a couple months ago. I want to do that right. I think you can agree with me. That's going to be a highly entertaining moment for the fans when we finally get to do that little gimmick.
Mike, have you watched back to that incident since then?
Well, watched it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the internet everywhere.
Were you surprised at the amount of shit that actually happened, or?
I was pretty surprised at the shittiness of it once I actually saw it. Like, I knew it was kind of shitty, but I didn't know how shitty it was until I actually saw it. But yeah, here's the deal with that. That fucker fucked up shit for me, really, because I still get shit about that all the fucking time because of that cockhead. I really do. I got a fucking message today about it. I got a fucking, once every 2-3 weeks, somebody fucking emailed me. Was that work? Was that real? I was like, shit. And it's like, it was a shoot. Like, Ian was on there yesterday saying it was a work. He's fucking lying, piece of shit. It was a shoot. Like, it was an absolute shoot. I knew nothing. I was totally fucking lied to. He's full of shit. And, you know, fuck him. And after hearing everything else about him, like, what about this guy? Huh? I don't know if he's doing something on me. But, yeah, he just, yeah, he fucking sucks. Like, I hope that he gets the same thing that he did on me and they beat him to death. That's what I'm hoping on. I mean, it's no girl, but that's really what I want. Well, I'll be weighing him now, and there's a chance it could happen. Let's hope so. Cross the fingers.
I think people are highly mistaken if they don't think that Bull's serious. You know, another guy that's jumping on and talking shit on, man. I'll tell you what, I think pretty much after what he had to say last night and knowing Bull the way I do, I'm telling you that there's going to come a time when Bull is going to get him. Well, okay, you guys ready for the bombshell from Billy Graham tonight or what, man?
Sure.
Mike, I got you here. You want to hear one?
Yeah.
Okay, check this out. Last night, Ian Rotten told me that, oh, I'm a real tough guy across the phone. And as I waxed on earlier, not the way that civilized people solve their problems. But you know what else, man? Since I've been a little kid, being the skinny little fucker that people were beating up and pushing around, I've hated bullies. I hate bullies. The only thing I hate more than bullies is probably racists and rapists. And so I've got a proposition that I'm going to put out here to the world. And don't think that I'm saying this from a point of, oh, Ian, I'm going to kick your ass or anything like that. But this is how far my 51-year-old, skinny, shit-talking, disease-ridden ass is. That fuck a wrestling show or a locker room full of thugs that are going to back him up. The guy outweighs me by about 150 pounds, okay? This is how dedicated I am to fighting for what is right. So this is going to be either the most ridiculous thing anybody's ever heard or a bombshell, depending on who you are. Right now on Yakuza Kick Radio, I am putting forth a challenge to Ian Rotten. And this is what the challenge is. I will gladly face Ian Rotten in a kickboxing match. Punches and kicks only. Safety kicks, safety gloves. Okay? No holds, no grappling, no wrestling. Strikes only. I will absolutely gladly get in the ring and have a kickboxing match with Ian Rotten under two conditions, that it's not done at a professional wrestling show with a bunch of cronies, and that Bull Payne is the referee. And I do not care. He may beat my ass. He may break my nose. He may knock me out. He may knock my teeth out of my throat. But I will tell you this, that if he does knock me out, as soon as I get conscious, I will get back in the ring and I will fight him again. So there you have it, Ian. I'm a tough guy. Fuck you. I want you with the safety boots, the safety gloves, in a fucking ring, strikes only. I want to fucking fight you. That's how tough I am.
Wow.
I don't care if I lose. I am challenging you, Ian Rotten. I am challenging you, John Williams, to get in a ring, and I want fucking Mike Levy and Peter B. Beautiful and Mickey Knuckles. I want them sitting at ringside to watch it, okay? And even if I, like I said, I'm not bragging, maybe he'll kill me. But what I'm saying is I am absolutely willing to face him with fists and feet.
Another caller on the line, and I'd like to bring him into the fray, and that is a returning guest, the one and only Insane Lane.
Hey, everybody, how's it going?
Lane,
what's going on, Lane?
Hey, how's everything been for y'all?
Shitty as usual.
It's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's been a couple of interesting few days for myself, too. Everybody's been talking about the Ian Rotten interview last night and all that stuff. I just wanted to interject my little two cents in on a few things here. basically, I don't know if a lot of you knew, but I had got an offer from JCW to tag back with Ian to form the Bloody Brothers. And at first I was hesitant, and because I didn't know, because like I said, I haven't spoke to Ian in 2 years, and I still wasn't sure about it. But last night, when I'm just gonna say I've heard a lot of rumors about Ian, and I know Ian's done a lot of people dirty, and to quote Charlie Sheen, I would just say, well, what's that got to do with me? That I didn't do none of that stuff. But, to come to find out, when I heard that interview and when I heard Mickey get on there and just rip him a new one and saying, you beat me and all this stuff, and then it's the way he acted, and then Bull and Pondo got on the phone, got on the line and ripped him a new one. And then, of course, my main man Skeletor Billy Graham got on there and pretty much... I affectionately call Billy Skeletor, man. He's my Skeletor. And,
I love it.
and him just giving him the business pretty much. And to hear somebody just not fess up to anything and just rationalize everything he's done pretty much made me sick. And another thing was, ever since I announced on my Facebook site that I was coming back to wrestle for JCW with Ian Rotten, all I've gotten is emails from people from Bull Payne to Dustin Lee and several other people saying, man, don't do it, man. You're too good for that. You're too good to work with him. And then I hear that he's got hepatitis C. Man, that's just some shit I just don't want on me. I've got kids to think about and my life to think about. And and when you call them out, I guess when Bull called him out on it, he neither denied or admit to doing it. And he just said a really lewd comment about Mickey swallowing a load or something about it, and it just absolutely made me sick. And I just want to announce it on here, on your radio show, that if Juggalo Championship Wrestling don't use me because of this, I'm saying right here, right now, out of my conscience and whatnot, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to tag with Ian. The Bloody Brothers ain't going to happen. If that means my return to the ring doesn't happen, so be it. My conscience is clear. And I just want to thank Billy for getting out there and calling him out, and Bull and Pondo and Mickey and all that stuff, and man, and the Mike, I'm just so glad that me and Freak Show weren't there during that beatdown, because that would have just disgusted us to no avail, because we were in our hotel room, because Ian was trying to find, because Ian couldn't find nobody. Because some women no-showed the tournament. He's like, hey, I'm trying to find some guys to get in here. And I was like, fuck that. I ain't getting no women's deathmatch tournament.
I fucking lucked out, because I actually volunteered to go out there and let them girls beat me up, man. It could have been me instead of Mike,
Yeah, I mean, and I got a phone call while I was there going, oh, my God. Mike Levy just got the shit beat out of him. I'm like, what? And he said, yeah, everybody jumped him. I was like, what? And I saw Mike, and of course when I got there to get ready for the second night of the tournament, and I just saw Mike, just sitting there, and I looked at him, and
yeah,
I really didn't know what to say to him.
Yeah, and then you come back, and you had such a great conscience that you gouged me in the head with a fork, you motherfucker.
it was all out of love.
I know that.
I saw the same lane before that. I was on a show with him in Lenore, North Carolina, like a few years before that show.
Yeah.
Freak Show team against, I think, Jugulator and...
Freak Show's the new reigning Deep South champion, man. The fucking, the head of the Deep South Coalition compound, motherfuckers.
Oh, yeah. It's about time he got his due, man. I mean, that guy, a lot of people, you know, I don't know what the deal is, but, you know, he's been toiling down south there for the longest, and, you know,
well,
and it's about time the man's got his due.
Speaking of getting their due, then since you've had the good conscience and the good mind, and good mind to come and make this announcement here and let, you know, the better natures of your personality prevail here in this fucking mix of bullshit. I would like to say this, Lane. Listen, man, you're a talented fucking guy. The fans fucking love you, man. Your brothers all love you. We all want to see you get back in a wrestling ring, man. Corp is a good guy, okay? JCW should still take the opportunity to work with Insane Lane, man, because he's an asset to anybody that he fucking works with. He's a crazy motherfucker. And the fans, all of us, your brothers, dude, we miss you being there. We miss you being in the locker room. We
Absolutely.
Miss you being at the shows. We miss you being in the ring. We miss you entertaining us. And, shit, I challenged Ian Rotten to it. I don't know if you were on hold. Did you hear? I challenged Ian Rotten to a legit kickboxing match tonight. Well, I'm challenging you to a fucking sing-off, motherfucker, okay? Not a duet. We've had our duets on the OJs and, you know, backstabbers and all that stuff, but I am challenging you, and it ain't going to be none of this safety dance shit either, okay? Like, it's got to be fresh material, okay, because it's too cheap. You already got the hit with the safety dance, so, you know, I expect you to come into this, you know, wrestling idol competition with some fresh material, man, but I will definitely, I'm looking forward to the day when we can put our pipes, you know, head to head in the middle of that squared circle, my friend.
Well, all right, man. I said my musical taste is kind of limited, man. I'm an 80s crooner, my friend.
Well, hey,
join me.
Did you hear the beginning of the show tonight?
I think I missed like the first 10 minutes.
Oh, shit. Maybe you want to jump in on this.
Do you want us to replay that clip?
Earlier tonight we were going into this one. I'll tell you what it is. You're no good. Ian, you're no good. I want to say it again. You're no good. Ian, you're no good.
Yeah.
And Insane Lane don't need your fucking Hep C ass.
How the fuck I don't, man. I mean, you know, when there's a guy with a reputation like Bull Payne, calling me and going, hey, brother, you know, Ian had to do this. He did not have to call me and tell me, hey, I don't know if it's a good idea, but I don't think you should work with Ian. There's a big nasty rumor going on. He's got hepatitis C. And Bull tells me that I won't work the guy. I mean that really goes a long way in my opinion. So, and let me tell you something, I have lost sleep over that stuff. And then, like, you know, Toby Klein sent me a link this morning to that radio show. He's like, hey, man, I think you should give a listen to this before you do anything drastic. And when I listened to it, I'm not going to lie, guys, I got teared up. It broke my heart because the man had no remorse. He had an excuse for everything he did. And what even made me more angrier was that he gave J.C. Bailey pills in lieu of pay.
I want to say something about that. Another little bit of actual factual detail about the incident that I mentioned last night. I made a slight mistake in the heat of what I was saying and said when I was yelling at him about giving JC drugs a month before he died. It wasn't a month before he passed away. It was 3 months before he passed. It was the night of after the King of the Death matches had concluded,
right.
And you know he admitted to Jerry Wiseman that he sold JC a couple pills because he was hurting after a match. Well, let me ask you guys this, okay? And look, we're not innocent, Lane. I'll admit, there's been times when I've been hurt enough that I've been, you know, I've taken a couple here and there.
Hell,
you know,
trying to
self-medicate. But, you know, and I also would say that, you know, there's not too many, as hard as this is to believe, there's not too many people in the business for as notorious and as public as the people that have had the problems, that have had the full-blown addiction, have been, you know, exposed. I don't know too many people in the business that do have that kind of full-blown addiction. I think that, I mean, I'm not trying to justify it. Just saying that, you know, most people have been a little bit controlled with their self-medication and things like that. And let me ask you, as guys, that we're all going to be frank here, right? Would anybody here equate him giving a guy that was hurting a little a couple pills? Guess what, guys? 60 fucking pills. 60 fucking pills is what he gave. 60 pills is what he gave JC after King of the Death Matches. 60 fucking
Jesus,
pills.
Jesus, Hail Christ, of Latter-day Saints.
It was a miracle that he lived past the night of King of the Death Matches. And not only that was the weekend that after he had it went on this binge after trying to be good for so long. I equate the company, okay? He had been being pretty good for a month and a half, 2 months, and then there he was. It's the company that you keep. The pusher don't care if you live or if you die, said the fucking song. Mars Bonfire, Johnny K, right? And I'm telling you that how could anybody equate helping a brother out with some pain with giving someone that was struggling so bad 60 pills? I went through two long periods of cocaine addiction back in my life a long time ago, okay? Certainly, when I was trying to kick it, if somebody came and gave me a couple 8-balls, okay, it wasn't just something to fucking tide the Jones or to kill the pain for a minute. Handing him 60 pills to me was basically would have been he certainly in the criminal justice system, if JC would have overdosed that weekend, he would have absolutely been able to be prosecuted for criminal negligence and negligent homicide, absolutely. And I hope that Joe Bailey will take that tape of that program last night and that some prosecutor will have the balls. And interestingly enough for me, I've got some friends in law enforcement all over the place, but I got some friends, and I'm not a snitch, I'm not a bitch, I'm not an angel, okay? But I will tell you this, that, you know, there's a fine line. It's that tightrope Frank was talking about earlier, and Ian did not fucking walk a fence. He jumped over that fence willingly, and to me, along with his foul comments that were lies about Mickey that made me puke just like you, I think the audacity of him last night, the audacity to act so flippant about selling JC these pills as if it was, what the fuck, you know, like, so what? I sold him some pills, so fucking what?
Well, I mean,
he doesn't have a conscience, but to give him, is there anybody else in this business, even if they themselves are fucking around, right, that would have handed JC 60 fucking pills in one shot?
That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? Especially a man that's trying to recover and get his act straight and stuff.
Right.
You know, and
that's because it was a way of not paying the money that he owed.
Oh, exactly.
Because, you know he fucking conned those pills off of somebody else without paying. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You know, fucking prescription, my ass, he tried to say. Like, prescription, yeah. Uh-huh.
And I want to say this. What was the name of the interview? Jerry Wiseman?
Yeah,
he asked me, so he said, Ian, have you ever paid guys drugs in lieu of money? And he flat out said no. I laughed my ass off because I'm here to tell you today that one of the shows, I don't remember exactly which one, I think it was the one, it was in Joliet, me and Freak Show, of course, you know, we were driving all the way from Fort Bend, Alabama. We drove longer than any of them motherfuckers that came in there. Right,
you drove
a long way too, and you know he gave us a little bit of cash and he gave us a bag of weed. Now, I ain't saying bag of weed is drugs, but he gave, but I mean it's a controlled substance in the eyes of the law. So I mean
I will testify to back you up that I was there for that, and so laughed when he said it too, because
he gave me a burger bag when he said, who's your favorite promoter? And I was like, gee, thanks, man. You know, but I mean, I'm not gonna be able to, pay the gas attendant with a nickel bag to get home. You know what I'm saying?
You got money.
He said that shit to me one time, same thing, and said, "Who's your favorite promoter?" And I didn't even miss a beat. I said, "John Zandig."
He must have fucking broke a tooth, Chris, clenching his teeth.
And that's a fucking shoot. John Zandig is proof that you don't have to be a scumbag, and so is Pondo. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be a scumbag to be a fucking wrestling promoter. I'm sorry. You know what I mean?
Right.
I know it's an anomaly and an anathema to the fucking business, but you know, I can't say enough good about John. So you know,
yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah,
you know,
John always did me good when I was there too. So
yep.
I mean,
yep.
Yeah, when I worked
care
for Pondo. He was really nice. Like, the locker room was totally different.
Mike, did you notice that last night he tried to throw Pondo under a bus with you? He brought that up. He said, Pondo almost impaled
yeah.
my team. It was like, yeah, no, in the course of a match, shit fucking happens. But I think the point being, fucking John Williams, that Pondo was not with intent trying to injure Mike Levy, okay?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I know when, like, because, like I said, I was knocked unconscious at that point. But I know I've wrestled him twice, and he has not, like, stiffed me or anything. Like, not even, like hit hard or anything. He's, like, totally cool as shit. Like,
yeah.
Pondo's treating me very well, pretty much.
I just got a message on Facebook from Kickboxer that thanked us for being on the show and giving him the opportunity, and he has just told me that if Ian Rotten will accept my challenge to a kickboxing match, that we can do it at the Rage Dojo.
Nice.
So I want Bull Payne as the referee, and of course I want some ticket sales to go to the charity that we all come up with. And like I said, guys, if he breaks my nose and knocks every teeth out of my face, you guys just be standing there with the ice bucket to wake me back up, because as soon as I wake back the fuck up, my skinny fucking ass is going to get back up in there. Now, also I'm going to say that I would expect there's probably going to be a bunch of Indians coming down from Cattaraugus, you know, that are going to be in the audience, and they've got a little bit of a issue with Ian threatening my life, being that I fought and defended the Seneca people at a point of people shooting at me. Whatever, Ian. You know, like, I'm a tough guy on the phone. I'm on the phone again, but I'm calling you out, motherfucker. Get in the ring with me. Kickboxing match, no wrestling. We're gonna neutralize, try to make it more fair with that weight advantage. And of course, Bull is going to make sure that you don't have a knife or anything, loaded gloves or anything like that. It's just going to be you and me in the middle of the ring, Bull Payne in the stripe. He's going to be the zebra, and it's going to be knockout only, no submission. And like I said, you can knock me out fucking 10 times, but I believe in what's right, and I will take the beating. I will take that beating out of respect to fucking Mike, out of respect to Mickey, out of respect to his children, out of respect to Peter B. Beautiful, another guy we didn't mention, that he supposedly never took advantage of anybody in the business. I hope he doesn't get mad at me for saying this, but I would say that clearly there was a point once upon a time when dysfunction was another person that he physically took advantage of.
Yeah, he did. I was in a tag match with him one time for JCW. And he had dysfunction, and he kept saying, "I dare you not to sell, motherfucker," and he kept hitting. I'm like, what the fuck did he do? I didn't know what the backstory was, but he got in the ring with this, and he just fucking started, popping him pretty hard. He just kept saying, "I dare you not to sell, motherfucker," and kept hitting him. And another thing about him saying, you know, "Oh, I never do want to take advantage of anybody." The double death, where I broke my pal was pretty much.
Tell this story, brother. Tell this story. Yep.
We were wrestling two new kids, Donnie Pepper Cricket and Steven Saint. You know, and I was pretty upset with some shit that happened. I'm not going to go there with that right now. But he went in there and said, "Lane, I know you're mad right now. Do you see these two kids out here? I want you to beat the fuck out of them. Show them what the hardcore wrestling's really about." And I just looked at Ian, and I was like, And, you know, these two guys were had came in there and took the time to talk to me and said, hey, man, I'm sorry how things have been going down with you, man. I'm really sorry. I said, nah, man, it's okay. He said, we're going to go out there and have a good match. He went out there, and he wanted me to go out there and beat the fuck out of these two guys. And I'm sorry. That's not my nature. I go out there to work because I'm going out there and beat the fuck out of them. It's not going to work good at all. So I went out there, and I had a match with them. And you know what? Yeah, during that match, I hurt my ass split like the fucking Red Sea, but I had a good match with them nonetheless. And I came up there, shook their hands, said, was everything okay? They're like, yes, thank you, and all that. I can't, you know what, screw that. I'm not going to sit there and beat the fuck out of these guys because they want to try to get a name for themselves. I mean, that's just so unprofessional. It's professional wrestling.
I mean, first thing that everybody in the business is taught, bro, is what? To take care of the other person. If he's got
exactly.
a family.
Exactly.
Right, and you know what? For all these smart marks out there that think they know all the terminology, what Lane is talking about and preaching on here is called a green light, okay? And you are infamous for green lighting people, okay? And you're going to deny you took advantage of people. Hey, Jay, do you by any chance have another caller hanging on with an Indiana number?
Not that I know of, Eric.
Okay. I think we missed that one, unfortunately. That would have really been maybe we'll get him on another time.
No, I haven't seen any number.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I had someone that was trying to call in. I just got a message. Someone from a law enforcement agency was trying to call. The bot that says, Billy, I don't know how I can help other than to say that you are the man. Okay, and that's coming from an Indianapolis police officer, dear friend of mine. Anyway, you know, and once again, obviously, no secrets between us. You know, still respects me despite all this, you know, smoking of marijuana that I do and everything. That just ticked me off to no end to not admit that he has physically, you know, taken advantage of people. I was starting to tell a story about that last night. You bring up those shows we were doing out in Joliet, and I threw it in his face last night about fucking up our shit. On the day when he was doing a pseudo-suicide attempt in front of Mickey and John Calvin. And, you know, what he did was he just ripped apart our whole angle after months of planning just out of spite. And then you can watch that on the DVD. I believe it is the show right before Double Death where it's Deranged and Toby with me, and we come out to face Corp. And Corp's partner is not there, and then Ian is the shocking partner. And if you watch the DVD, you'll see Ian in the ring, and he says how he swears to God, Billy Graham, if he gets near me, he's going to chair shot the fuck out of me and put me out of the professional wrestling business for good. And then you'll see the camera switch over to me and Toby and Deranged having a huddle, you know, over in front of the doorway there. And I can tell you, the fans and everybody, man, that while we are over there in that huddle, what is really being said, no, it's not the leader of Cult Fiction strategizing with his wrestling charges. It is us discussing the fact that, wow, Billy, man, he's really out to fucking cave your fucking head in. Stay the fuck away from him because he's going to fucking hurt you. That's what was going on between me and Deranged and Toby at that moment. And because he at that point, shit had already started to hit the fan between us, and I was just trying to hold out for Double Death so that the retard would fucking put Damaged and Deranged over again, which would thusly be a nice, because unbeknownst to him, Zandig had already made an agreement with me to bring them in to start our feud with the Hate Club, so we wanted to have a little, you know, a little heat going into that for the VDOP. And so, you know, we knew we were stepping out, so we manipulated Ian. And that's why he got his panties in a bunch when dude wasn't going to work there anymore. And of course, you know, when I said last night the other half of that match had been in the ground, he's like, what do you mean he's in the ground? The person I was referring to was Lance Cade, who has, of course, since passed, who also never showed up that night but didn't give any advance notice. And Ian didn't throw him under a bus anywhere, despite the fact that my guy had canceled 2 months in advance. And then a month after the fact, he's thrown him under the bus as a no-show. That's specifically, yeah. And also he was the one that mentioned his name. I didn't, so I apologize to my brother that his name came up without, you know, him having knowledge. It wasn't me who did it. I stayed vague, and then Ian had to go and, you know, talk shit about robots and shit. So, but I mean, is there any doubt? I mean, that I think that Lane, Mike, I think that if we could do something, and I think what Kickboxer was saying about something positive here, if there's anything to come out of all this, I mean, you heard that Mike Levy, people refused an opportunity. You know, you heard Insane Lane now just refuse an opportunity. I walked out on a situation that was keeping Cult Fiction, you know, in front of the fans. For you young guys, man, you know, it's not because you're nobody. It's not because you're some yard tart or anything like that. Don't, the message we could bring, guys, to these people, these young guys coming up, is don't do it. Don't fall for it. Don't work for the guy. And to our other brothers that continue to take bookings from this guy simply for a payday, that if you want to call it that, you know, I'll get you on the next one, kid. But I'm saying, there's got to be a point as a human being when you cannot rationalize. I've had fans say, well, we know Ian did wrong, but, you know, you're going to take away IWA Mid-South from us. Well, you know, there's things more important in this world than a payday. And, you know, the way I say is the wrestling business, man, it's like a snake. You know, one snake pops its head up out of the grass. You cut off its head, and guess what happens? Two more pop their head up out of the grass. So the only thing that's going to happen from IWA Mid-South not existing is that maybe it's going to create a need for someone to come along and get a promotion off the ground for the people in that region that maybe can do it a different way. You know what I mean? Because there's plenty of workers that want to entertain the fans. There's plenty of fans that want to see something. So, you know, simply saying, well, what am I going to do? This is my chance. You mean nothing. There's a point when that can't be justified anymore, man. You guys that are our brothers in the business, they're going to still take a payday from this guy. I mean, how much harm, how many people can he hurt? It's like I said to him last night. He is not the victim. He is the victimizer. And you know, we can't justify it anymore, guys. We can't. All of us have to be a voice to make sure that nobody else ever has to go through the things that we've went through, that Mike Levy has went through, that Justin Lee has went through, that PW Beautiful went through, that Dysfunction went through, that these kids that he was training in that building over in Joliet went through. You know, I know because my initial training in the business, 1992, in the Monster Factory, somebody took advantage of me, and I was in the hospital with a slight cerebral edema, among other things. And in other words, my brain was fucking bleeding. And that was, you know, 19 years ago. And you know what? It started a fight that night in that wrestling school because several workers attacked this person who later went on to become a big WWE superstar, Glenn Ruth, you piece of fucking shit, otherwise known as Headbanger Thrasher. You're a fucking cunt. And then on top of it, he makes all that money in the WWE, and then his wife gets hit with a fly ball at a Phillies game, and they sue the fucking Philadelphia Phillies, who settled out of court for $2 million. But this guy, to amuse himself, almost fucking killed me in a fucking wrestling ring. I mean, there are these personalities in the business, man. And we've got to – it's not what the business is supposed to be about, and we've got to, like – you know, you've got a guy like Frank there, you know, that's trying to – look at the good things that he instilled in all the Naptown Dragons. You know, look at the good things that he instilled in Drake and in Scotty and David and even in Dustin at one point. I mean, you know, Dustin, he's a controversial figure, to say the least. I mean, I think he kind of went about what he did the wrong way and threw everybody under the bus. And it's not because I'm not saying that he didn't have his points. But, you know, like I said before, when it comes to being an outright snitch on your own bros out of spite and desperation, that's something that I can't condone. I don't wish him any ill will, you know what I mean? But as I said to Ian Rotten, it's my firm conviction and my belief that Ian Rotten, when he says he didn't hurt anybody, I believe that he absolutely marred Dustin for life. You know, and how do you measure that? You know,
it's made him bitter. I mean, I've talked to Dustin several times, and he's just so bitter. And it's sad because, you know, Dustin, he was a great wrestler. He did some good stuff, you know, and it's just, you know, I know there's things that he's said and done, and like you said, Billy, that he may have not gone the right way with, and I totally agree with that. But you know, when he gets like beat up over getting some pussy from his girlfriend or something, you know, I mean, that's gonna make anybody bitter. Hell, that'd make me bitter, you know. And I just hope one day his heart can soften up and he can move on. I'm not saying go forgive Ian Rotten and have a sing kumbaya or whatever, but you know, just go be able to move on.
Really talented, Dustin. Ain't been wrestling and shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Let
Dustin's
me ask you a question.
Really good.
Jay, we're still talking. I'm getting messages from people on Facebook that we were cut off because of a time limit.
Well, yeah. Well, what it is everything's still being recorded and it'll all be on archive.
So in the archive, they'll be able to hear the whole show. Good. Okay. Well, fuck. Then we're good.
Live listeners get cut off.
Lane, really good point. And Mike, yeah, I agree with you about Dustin, man. And Lane, really, really good point, brother. I mean, you know.
I have him a few times.
Yeah, you did when you called me Skeletor, man. That one's going to stick for the rest of my life.
I know, man. That'd have got so over if they'd have done that.
I know. We could have done
me and Toby doing that angle with the say anything, and he didn't even fucking do it. And I thought that was
I know. It was a great idea, and, you know, as usual, you know, when guys in the business have great creative ideas, we don't do that. Instead, we do a dumber idea that doesn't make any sense that the promoter and the ass kissers come up with. That's how it always is. There's another beef we have to save for another show. You know, the superior creative intellect of the talent being quelled for nothing but the ego of the man in charge. You know what I mean? The indie wrestling fans are robbed on a consistent basis because the talent is not allowed. And that's the difference of Paul Heyman. You know, people want to talk about what made ECW, and you listen to Steve Austin talk about it, it's because Paul Heyman had the smarts to let the workers run with their talent and run their own show. Say, hey, I don't know what you're going to say, Austin. Just go out there and do what you feel like doing. And that's what made it such a hotbed. That's what made it so entertaining, because people would be able to be compassionate, because instead of being disgruntled and crushed because their ideas were being squashed, you know, they were being allowed to flourish with their creativity and really embrace their character and be creative, you know what I mean? And now we're in a situation where we got people like Ian, you know, that aren't letting us be creative, that instead would rather just react to whatever's pissing them off that day. And I'm glad you brought up that shit about him handing you weed for payment, because I was there and I wasn't going to say it last night, but I was like, oh boy, there's got to be somebody weighing in on this one, because I was fucking sitting there. And I might add that while the weed might fuel the head, my brother, I'm sure it didn't help the gas tank on the way back to Alabama.
Oh, exactly. No, I mean, how am I going to go up there and they go, I mean, back then gas was ridiculous like it was now, and it's like, oh, it'll be $49.64. I'm like, well, I got $25 and a 20 sec. How will that? I mean, depending on who it is, they might be like, hell yeah. But I mean, but most probably be like, call the police and just run the whole ride home.
Yep. Not to mention, man, forget the fucking pork rinds and Cheetos, man, and Dr. Pepper, man. You're completely fucked. You know what I mean? There's no snacks either when you get paid and fucking, and you know, you get the munchies and then you can't get something to eat. You know what I mean? What the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell? That motherfucker wouldn't eat, man. Think about the nights that he had so many people in that building, and then Joe brought it up last night that he wouldn't even give the boys, he'd give them a day old hot dog and a can of pop, and then he wouldn't even give them that for free. Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but Ian, he was doing a double shoot. It was a Medora Mayhem show, and then he was doing the For the Love of Roland benefit show in Joliet the next day.
Yep.
You know, Freak Show, and Christian Haim. We were staying in Seymour, Indiana, which, by the way, has one of the best Chinese all-you-can-eat buffets ever. But, but that's besides the point. I get a phone call from Ian, and me and Berg are drunk drinking Jägermeister and watching Alabama kick the shit out of Clemson in a football game. He goes, hey, what are y'all doing? How far are y'all from the door? I said, well, man, I'm about 40 miles from the door. I left my pizza bake oven in there. Can y'all guys go get it tomorrow? I'll give you extra gas money. I'm like, I guess. So we drive all the way back the next morning. go get, and we had to wait like 40 extra minutes for the lady to come in there so she can open up the door so we can get the pizza thing. We drive all the way from there to Joliet. I mean, we get there like 40 minutes before the show's to start, and we're pissed because, I mean, we've always made an effort to get there at least an hour, hour and a half before the show starts. That's just professional courtesy. But after that, you know, we go have our match, and, of course, Ian never gives me my gas money. He goes, I'll get you back later next time, kid. Sorry. Whatever. Well, anyway, I'm hungry. So I'll go up there. I want to get me a snack. And Mickey, of course, at the time, you know, she was under Ian's thumb and all that stuff. And she goes, no, you can't have one of those. You got to pay for those. The boss is going to get mad. I said, he can get mad. If it wasn't for me bringing that goddamn pizza oven up, y'all wouldn't even have concessions. I'm getting me something to eat. So I picked it up and went about my business. So,
and then,
yeah, I mean, he jerked you off for a damn hot dog. I mean, really?
And then last night, you know, another thing Joe mentioned last night about him trying to charge workers, old ladies, to get in the thing. That motherfucker tried that shit with me. We drive 15 motherfucking hours from the middle of Pennsylvania to fucking Joliet, Illinois, and he thinks I'm going to pay for my ex-wife and my kid to get in.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
I told him, like, are you fucking out of your mind? Well, it didn't stick, because I was like, yeah, fuck you, dude. You know what I mean? But you know, a lot of people, you know, aren't bold enough to say, fuck you, dude. You know what I mean? So, I like, but I mean, just, yeah, that he's that low. It's like, you figure, no, instead, it's like, hey, it's a couple extra bodies in the building that makes it look like you drew 68 instead of 65, you dumb fuck, you know?
Exactly.
Well, holy shit, man. Jay, man, I think you and Eric have got cause for another fucking version of this next, like, part two next week, man. We can keep going, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
man,
hit it while it's fucking hot, man, because this shit all just blew up this week, man. I mean, I think the main thing being is that we got to stick behind Brother Joe and stick by what I said earlier, that we've got to make a concentrated effort, man, to make sure that this is not, this fucking snake is not going to come back up out of the grass, man. I mean, he had John Calvin running and booking that show he was planning to start with. I liked the shit last night about the insurance, man. Joe nailed him on that.
He had the whole scam down, man.
Knew it from top to bottom. I can't name a company. I saw someone on the message board to say they couldn't believe Ian didn't just pop off with, oh, Geico is going to do it. He couldn't even.
Yeah.
State Farm, man. You know, Mutual of Omaha, something, you know, like he couldn't even fucking.
I don't know any.
If you're gonna lie, do it right. You can't even lie right.
You know what Ian reminded me of on that when they were calling him out, he couldn't think of nothing and all the excuses he made. Y'all ever watch the Steve Wilkos show?
Yeah.
You know, the motherfuckers like, I know you touched my kid. No, I didn't touch that kid. Well, why? Well, why did you do? He made all his little excuses and everything that he said reminded me of one of those pieces of shit that you see on that show that's just trying to justify everything they say. And they, like I said,
I mean,
it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, and I talked to Ian like Sunday, you know, and we were cordial to each other. You know, and I'm a forgiving person. I like to give people second chances, but when I cannot forgive somebody that can't even admit when they're wrong, when they sit there and they're such a sociopath and they can't sit there and say, look, I'm sorry, I feel bad, I did this, and you know, and when Nikki was calling him out, that you beat me in, and I did not know this, and that hurt me because I've known it
for a couple of years, and I knew it for a couple of years. She told me when it happened. And she swore me to secrecy. She was so afraid. And I had not heard the first half of the show. I just got all these messages. Joe Bailey's on the fucking radio with Ian fighting. And I was like hot. And so when I blurted that out about him beating her up, I thought I had betrayed her confidence. I thought she was going to be mad at me. So then when I went back and heard the beginning of the show, I was relieved.
Yeah.
She
called him out. And I could, and I heard that. And all he could say is, whatever. Whatever, you're going to say what you want. You know what
I think it's also funny the fact that he would blatantly admit selling JC pills, right? But when I pressed him about threatening to kill me, all he would say is, look, when I got hot with you on the phone, and he apologized to me, you know what I mean, for blowing up on me, but he wouldn't come out and admit that he threatened to kill me.
Now, to me, I don't know. I think that admitting that he sold JC pills was a little bit more damning than admitting that he threatened to kill me. Because
I know, right? Well, he didn't see him as an addict. He saw him as a man in pain.
Yeah.
No.
I think what bothered me the most last night is just the fact, not that he's so stupid. I mean, we all know who in the world is waking up this morning not going, why did this fucking idiot stay there and continue to set himself up? Which my favorite part of that, right? I was so scared I was going to miss my chance because if you guys caught that, man, 25 minutes left in the show, after everybody else, five other people ripped into him, and he says to Ian, well, Ian, we got 25 minutes left. You can do one of two things. You can either just defend yourself for the last 20 minutes, or we have a caller. What do you want to do? I don't care. Boy, was that a mistake, wasn't it, guys? I don't care. You like the way I fucking Pearl Harbored his fucking ass? You know what I mean? Like he had. And you also know that the only one who he lost his temper on was me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The only one, because I've had the ability from day one to draw that motherfucker out into the open. He knows it. I know it. And
oh,
you
swear
know.
He was off the line when Joe Bailey was talking because he
mm-hmm.
kept his fucking mouth shut.
Oh, he sure did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
he sure did.
And all that stuff.
And I'll tell you, speaking of Joe Bailey, let's talk about Joe Bailey the second. Let's talk about JC's brother, the other Joe, okay? Because, you know, I know that while all these threats are being made and stuff like that, I know that brother Joe there, younger brother Joe, made it quite clear today that you know, you want to talk shit, that he's also more than willing to talk to Ian man to man. And I wouldn't want to be him if that conversation ever takes place. But I told the younger Joe today, you know, please, brother, let me take care of your light work for you. You know what I mean? I'm gonna drop the bomb tonight. So, hey, Ian, man, you and me, Rage Dojo, kickboxing match. It's your chance, man. It's your chance to knock me the fuck out. It's your chance to humiliate me. But guess what? The way I look at it, guys, is how can I lose? Even if he knocks me out in the ring, am I going to lose respect for that?
No.
How's he going to win? He can't win. It's a no-win. It's a no-win, Ian. So come on. It was a no-win last night. You were that stupid. So face me. Face me at the Rage Dojo with Bull Payne as the referee, with all your non-victims sitting in the front row, with Section C, the Cattaraugus Indian Nation, sitting on that side, and I am ready, brother. I am ready. I'm going to train. I will train with fucking Frank. I'll put on 3 pounds. I'll get myself up to 169, and look out, man. And just for a word, I was fighting full contact karate when I was 19 fucking years old. I have a background of 7 years of martial arts. It's been a while, but your fucking idea and every one of your ideas that I'm some kind of fucking pussy, like I said, I'm not going to claim I can beat anybody. But I will fight. I will fucking fight you because you're a fucking evil fucking scumbag. So guess what? Spider-Gram, with great power comes great responsibility. So the saying goes, well, I will step up to my responsibility. And Ian Rotten, I want to fucking just get... All I want to do is punch you in the fucking face one time. That's all. One time, man, and I don't care what you do to me after that. But I'll tell you what, man, I'm 6'4". I got a long fucking reach. You're really fucking slow. I'm going to float like a butterfly, sting like a fucking bee, and I'm going to put my fucking size fucking 12 foot first up your fucking ass and then right down your fucking throat if you fucking have the balls to do it. Rage Dojo, brother. Face fucking Billy Graham in a fucking kickboxing match, you fucking homo. Faggot, I don't mean that in a homosexual way. I mean that the other way we say that. You know what I mean? Like, I got no hatred toward gays or anything like that. I
you know how that's going to end, right, Billy?
I love everybody except for Ian Rotten and George Custer, man.
You know how that's going to end, right, Billy? He's going to blade in the middle of the ring in front of the whole crowd and try to have it stop due to bleeding.
What's blading? I never heard of that.
Oh, my goodness.
When he does things in front of the camera that exposes the business, that's what I hear.
What's blading? I don't know what that is.
Blade Runner? That's a great movie.
Ask any camera that's filmed Ian Rotten.
I have no idea what blading is. What is this blading that you speak of? I have no idea.
It's still real to me, damn it.
That's right. It's still fucking real to me, god damn it.
Yeah.
Well, holy shit, this was fun, actually, tonight, unlike last night.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, Mike,
another thing
is... Mike Levy, you still hanging?
Yeah, sir.
What's that?
Okay, brother. I'm just checking on you, man.
another thing that stood out that, you know, I got to say as a fan, I mean, you know, we're not part of the business. You know, we watch on and we enjoy the matches. There's a lot of matches that go down in history, and, you know, Joe Bailey brought up one in the Circus Death Match. I mean, when you hear as a fan later on that, I mean, these guys each got $100 for doing something that most wrestlers wouldn't come anywhere near. I mean, that's really discouraging. And, you know, when you're pitching that and you're showing different people stuff that they haven't seen before, and they, wow, these guys must get paid a lot and this and that. And then you come down to the bottom of it, and about $100, and they passed around a hat. It's
quite disheartening.
Where are you going to point the blame? I'm not one of these, you know, I don't believe anybody's bullshit over-exaggerated hype. I got a couple friends over at the WWE. I don't believe in this Vince McMahon crucification and all this other shit. You know, everything's hype and everything's exaggerated. And I'll tell you this, but the sad fact of the matter is, because of the domination of professional wrestling by one company, by one product, by the end of the regional promotion system as we knew it for so many years, I mean, that is the reason that in ECW, I mean, that's the bottom line. That's the reason why it evolved into us guys all being involved in the crazy shit that we're involved in as the only way of having a hope of drawing any kind of real numbers into a building. So, you know, and people, you know what, Lee, I keep all the time what they barrage me with is why. Why would you do it? And what I say to them is I think, you know, we all joke about it and stuff like that, but I think that it's a very complex issue. I think the fact that, first of all, every one of us fell in love so much with professional wrestling as fans at some point in our life that we wanted to participate, you know, and then from the participation you add in enjoying the performance, enjoying the escape, enjoying, you know, the fantasy and stepping out of the humdrum world into something that we create. And I would say for me personally, and I know at least some others, I can't speak for you, I can't speak for Mike Lee, but I can say that, you know, shocking people, testing the boundaries of human endurance, and dare I say it, flirting with disaster, and not to steal a catchphrase, cheating death, is a high, one that you can't get in a bottle or in a pill.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's like, I don't know. I like wrestling because, like, I don't know. It's like it's an escape from the real world. That's the way I use it.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's only two things in the world I always wanted to be. Well, maybe three. I want to either work at comic books, be an actor, or be a wrestler. And I get to do two of those things. Actually, three, because when I'm in St. Lane, I'm this comic book character crazy guy. I get to act like a crazy guy, and I get to wrestle. So, I get to do all three.
I
love it.
You guys know, like, I've been involved in all those things, okay? I've got three movies coming out this year, shameless plug, The Cemetery, Revenge is Her Middle Name, and Theater Bizarre Wet Dreams. But anyway, what I was going to say is that, yeah, another thing that I find great about it, because I was a musician, I was involved in film, things like that, that, you know, wrestling is the only one that combines elements of all forms of entertainment. That, yes,
you're absolutely
there's athleticism, there is acting, there is music, there's bright lights, there's a crowd, and then the one thing that differentiates it, two things I would say, is that the audience is actually part of the performance and the illusion, and then there's that why factor of, you know, the spontaneity, the improv, and never knowing what's really going to happen no matter what you plan, that just make it really, really enticing and very rewarding. You know, I mean, we hear people always talking about a lot of the bad, but, you know, and you know, certainly the money for most of us has not been the payoff. But I would certainly say that somebody ought to point out the idea that there is a payoff and there are some rewards that we all do get from it that maybe might not be apparent to others. But certainly if there was no satisfaction for us at all, then we probably wouldn't bother, you know.
Right. I mean, I'm not a money-driven person. And, you know, the things I get out of it, of course, you know, is, man, to live a dream that I've always wanted to do as a kid, and the friendships I make. Yeah, I know in this business, you run across a lot of scumbag people and all that, but through the scumbags, you find them few people that you find a kindred spirit with, you know, and you strike up a friendship with them, even though you may you may live in Ohio, and I might live in Georgia, or you might live in North Carolina, or, you know, or Pennsylvania, or Connecticut, or Compton, or whatever, you know. You strike up friendships with these people, and for the most part, you're friends for life. And through wrestling,
absolutely.
You know, because you trust each other. When you get in the ring, you got to have a special trust with each other to go out there and beat the living dog shit out of each other, you know, and do that. You know, you got to really love somebody to say, hey, I love you, man. Now beat the shit out of me and make it look good.
You know what? Hey, that's a funny. There you go, man. Prime example. I think you made a great point about the friendships because, you know, I've made those friendships both, you know, with the workers and the fans all over the place. I mean, we're talking to two of them now. But and real friendships and touch people's lives in ways that we can't even always keep tabs on. But I'll tell you, there's one right there. You talk about the trust. I remember, you know, that match that we'll never forget in CZW, Triple Threat, Insane Lane, Freak Show, and Toby Klein with me in his corner.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lane and Freak Show had gotten some positive response at TOD. And I knew how tough that Philly crowd was, and I can remember coming up to Lane and Freak Show and saying, hey, I got this great idea for you guys today, man. Like, you know, this is how you guys are going to kill me. And I can remember them looking at me like, dude, no. Like Freak Show saying, no, dude, I can't do that to you. But, yeah, you know, like, I had Lane, Mother Lane, you know, clock me and smash a trash can over my head, and then, of course, Freak Show turned me into an even flatter piece of paper than I was at the start of it. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. But once again, yes, that trust, and because of being good guys and guys that I felt, you know, deserved to get that kind of like respect from the fans of doing something they would really like. Because I knew, even though I was supposed to be a good guy, most of them at that point hated my fucking guts. And we made it make sense. And it didn't hurt me either, as far as getting over to a certain extent. And
right.
a legendary moment that I wouldn't trade for anything. I mean, that'll always still stick out as one of my favorite nights in the business. Man, was you guys fucking killing me. And I mean, but that didn't mean you had to fucking call me Skeletor and stab me in the head with a fucking fork, man. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, man, and you were deranged, just picking me up and using me as a weapon against fucking Tank. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dropping me like, fucked up my ribs on that one, man. I am not a fucking athlete, that's for sure.
You do all right. You do all right, man. You do a lot better than most. That's for damn sure.
Oh man, thank you, brother.
Hey, you didn't sandbag us, which is good. I mean, I know you're 150, but still, I mean, if you sandbag somebody, like they ain't that kind of amount of weight. I mean, it's still gonna be heavy, but you sat there and got up with it so easy and went boom right now.
Thank you.
And it looked
good
too. It was great.
Actually, Carnage Cup. You know, Danny gave me a pat on the back for when he saw Carnage Cup when he gave me that running power slam or whatever he. He kind of gave me a pat on the back for not sandbagging it on that one, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, ain't nothing worse than a sandbagger. I hate them motherfuckers.
Yeah. hell, with my skinny punk pussy-ass manager guy that I am, it's crazy that I wasn't holding onto the ropes, clutching for dear life, wrapping these long legs around him, saying, no, please don't. I changed my mind.
Hey, I know some wrestlers, you know, in the Alabama area that, I used to work, you know, you pick them up, they start getting scared to death, and they, of course, it ends up looking like crap, and then I end up kicking the shit out of them for fucking it up, but, I mean, it is what it is.
I'll tell you what, in the entire time that I've known Lane, guys, I'd say this with him here, I've only seen him get miffed once, and it was with me, and it was actually at that same notorious weekend, Mike Levy, as the Queen of the Death Matches, it was King of the Death Matches. In that three-way, these fuckers were supposed to have fucking some light tube bundles out there, and it was, you know, Lane's going to get me with the light tube bundles, right? And Lane goes to find, at the time comes, and Lane goes to fucking find the light tube bundles, and there are no light tube bundles, and I admit I fucking panicked because the next thing I know, Lane's got, like, I think, what do you have, like a 2x4 with light bulbs on it or a 2x4 with nails or some shit?
I think it might be a chess racket with broken glass on it. I can't remember.
It scared the fuck out of me, and, you know, we're out there in the heat of the moment, and you're really doing your character really well. And so basically what happened was I fagged out and I fucking ran away. And you know, it's because I'm not thinking it's Lane. You know, I'm thinking about some of these other motherfuckers, you know what I mean, that aren't so kind. And I fucked up his shit, you know, in the match because, so he was hot with me, man, when we got back in the back. He's like, what the fuck did you do, man? Like, you know, if you said you're going to, and I was like, dude, it wasn't a goddamn, he's like, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm like, well, how the fuck do I know that with a fucking goddamn, it looked like something from the fucking Spanish Inquisition, you know what I mean? A fucking goddamn 2x4, you know what I mean? And plus, you know, I guess, you know, what you guys do to each other, you know what I mean? Sometimes, man, crazy shots, man. I was just like, fuck, I gotta make it through, you know, for another match yet. I didn't want to, and plus I didn't want to stop loving you so much, you know what I mean? If I had 2x4, you know, I would have probably maybe affected our friendship or something. I don't know. But listen, if I had it to do over again and you had a chainsaw in your fucking hand, I would go through with it because I realized after the fact that Jesus Christ, man, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, it made me feel real. I felt like such the scolded child, man. When Lane is such the generous guy, you know, when he went like that. Some people fucking flip out on you for fucking up, and it's just their ego and their don't want to say any names. Jimmy Jacobs, anyway, but it's their own fault. But you know, when I let Lane down, man, I was crushed, man. I was like, oh man, I'm such a fucking, I suck, man. You know, it's because of respect. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're out there, you want to help, and you do. And it wasn't because I didn't trust you. It was because I fucking was scared of that weapon, man. I was.
Oh, man. You know, honestly, man. I mean, I'm probably one of the lightest deathmatch workers out there. I mean. I make it look good. I mean, I might put a little oomph into it, but I mean, if it's something, my philosophy is, if I don't know how to use it, and this is something Bullpen taught me early in my career when I faced him in Carnage Cup in 2006, which was probably one of the best matches I ever had, by the way, deathmatch wise. He says, he was like, kid, if you don't know how to use it, don't pick it up and use it. So, I mean, so that's basically the philosophy I go by. If I don't know how to use it, I'm not going to use it, you know?
Well, now, you know, hindsight is 20/20. If I would have known he had given you that advice and that was a conscious thought in your mind, that might not have run away. You know what I mean? I might have had the balls to stand and take it. But at that point, it seemed that discretion was the better part of valor for me to make it through another.
Oh, hey, Billy, it's all good, man. I still love you. It's not that big a deal. I mean, the match still turned out fine, and you know, unless some anal retentive mark out there went, look, he's fucking it up, or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever.
They tend to do that with me, you know what I mean? that's what I'm there for, I guess, you know what I mean? But, yeah, you know, I just figured I brought that up just because in the midst of all this fucking shit, I guess some of these fans once in a while would like to hear some kind of shit about, you know, what went behind the scenes and the inner workings of a match, you know what I mean? So I just kind of threw that out there as the random fucking tidbit, you know what I mean? To enlighten and wisen them up even more, because God knows they already know everything else. So we, you know, I think I don't know what the accepted grace period. I mean, you got everybody who's ever worked in the business has got shoots all over YouTube from Abdullah to fucking to Zinc, man, you know what I mean? From A to Z, they're all telling everything that happened at every single moment. So I don't know I didn't get the memo on what the grace period is of when you're allowed to talk about what happened in this match. I've got kind of a thing like, if it's been 2 years since that match took place, I think you're far enough removed from the moment that we can talk about it.
It's pretty much whenever you decide it's okay as an individual.
Yeah, I would like to think
that if me and Lane were in the midst of like some heated feud somewhere and some fed somewhere, that we wouldn't even be talking on this show right now. You know what I mean? I like, in all fairness to me, man, like, I mean, like, You know what? There's another inside story. I said, you know, after you guys did that to me in CZW, you know, and Freak Show crushed me and everything like that.
Uh-huh.
You remember the next month I came back on crutches with a neck brace and shit for the down with the sickness, right? And you know, Spike Dudley was there, and I worked that in front of everybody, the whole locker room. I was hobbling around the locker room on crutches. So finally I'm up in that upstairs dressing room alone with Spike. And he turns around to me and he goes, bro. And I go, yeah. He goes, what the fuck happened to you, man? I'm like, oh, what, this? He's like, yeah. I'm like, nothing. I'm fine. He goes, what? He goes, dude, you're fucking selling something that happened in wrestling? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, dude. He goes, I want to shake your hand, man. He goes, I want to shake your hand. I go, why? He goes, because it's nice to see somebody that has that much respect for the business. That they remember these things of what it's about like that. Because I watched you all. He goes, I thought, dude, he goes, I thought you got hit by a car. He goes, you sold me. He goes, I was a sucker. I was a mark. He goes, I was all day long going, look at that skinny-ass motherfucker. What the fuck did they do to this guy? and he bought it hook, line, and sinker.
How long was that before you ran out of the building?
Well, he didn't run. I'm not going to throw anybody on the bus. So that... To me, all I'll say about that situation is that both sides had their valid point. It was very complex because we were all involved in it. And I think that if cooler heads would have prevailed and people would have been just a little bit more diplomatic with one another, I think that we could have worked something out. But I think that he certainly had his points of concern, and one of them was including making Toby look too weak. He didn't need to worry about making Toby Klein look weak, okay? He did, you know. But, you know, on the other hand, conversely, John was the boss. He was the one paying the checks or the envelopes.
Yeah.
Ultimately, in the end, you got to make a conscious decision. I've had to do it. Lane's had to do it. Mike Levy's had to do it. We talked about it tonight. You've got to sometimes decide what's more important. Sometimes, you know, you can't go around every single time you don't like something and then quit and not do what you're supposed to do. But sometimes for people that have a conscience, man, there's something that comes along where you got to say, hey, you know what? I can't do this because I can't feel good about myself when I walk away. So I'm never going to fault another brother for having, something that, because like I said about me earlier tonight with the thing with people expecting me to not acknowledge JC's death. And just play the heel all the way up to, you know, Mike not doing what he was asked to do with Ian and up to Lane deciding to not take this opportunity right now. But on the other hand, conversely, I do understand that we're not the guy having to run the show and we're not the one that has every single person in the locker room that's got an issue that isn't happy with something. So, you know, it's a half a dozen of one and six of the other, you know what I mean? I'm not going to take sides like that. It's hard, man. You know, we're all people. We all got feelings, and we're all trying to, you know, work together, and sometimes shit doesn't work out, you know. And
yeah.
That's it. But I like hearing so many people, man, between Mike Levy tonight and Lane here, man, both making decisions that are based on their integrity and their conscience. I really respect the fuck out of you guys, man. You reminded me, if you go back to the beginning of this, because I've been feeling pretty much like the pariah and like the person that's alone in all this, man. That just like that nobody thinks like me, and that just like for being a good guy, you know, I'm fucking an outcast in all this, you know. So you guys reminded me. Yeah, I guess I'm not the only one.
It's like Michael Jackson sang a song. You are not alone.
Oh, shit. It's on again. It's on.
Yeah, see, I can bust out a tune other than him.
Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Stop, love, you say, let be your own. Silence, look, it's low, or someday you'll be all alone. You better stop, the love, you say, let be your own. S is for save me. T is for take it slow. O is for oh no. P is for please, please. Love you, say maybe own. Oh baby.
Now,
in Saint Lane, after we have our sing off, then we'll come together. We'll unite. Like, we'll be like a vocal NWO, and then we'll do like the Temptations. You know what I mean? We'll
be the VWO, the Vocal New Order.
Yeah, the Vocal World Order. I like the sound of it. I like the vocal wrestling order.
The karaoke wrestling order.
Yes, that'll work. You know what I mean? The lip sync wrestling order.
I'm tired. I'm taking a nap.
Okay, Mikey. Well, hey, Mike, man. Once again, brother, before you jump, man, just thank you, bro, for accepting my apologies, and thank you for being
straight. Thank you for coming on, Mike.
I wish you the best of luck, brother.
Good hearing from you, buddy.
Sooner or later, man, we'll get that thing together, man, and we'll freak everybody out, man.
That'll be cool. I'll talk to y'all later.
Okay, all right, peace. And alas, there was one Lex Horseman, but at least he wasn't Lex Luger or Paul Roma.
Oh boy.
Well, and you know what else is fucked up, Dan? Fucking Eric hasn't said two shits on this whole goddamn show. Is he here?
Hey, it's hard enough for me to open my mouth with you online, Billy.
You know what we fucking forgot for the last 2 hours? You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. Warning, there will be foul language, blah, 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 blah.
I'm losing control of my show here. This is Yakuza Kick Radio.
Your host, Insane Wiseman. Dude, that guy rocks, man. He's my new hero, man. This fucking wrap-up, when he got it, dude, some of those lines, man, you're not an apothecary, you're not a pharmacist.
Oh, I know, that was great.
Dude, what motherfucker in a wrestling radio show has ever used the word apothecary, okay? Like, that guy is fucking, I can't believe anybody criticized that kid today for having a couple things jumbled up.
He did a phenomenal job.
He really nailed him, dude. He nailed him to the cross like he was fucking goddamn 2020, dude. He was fucking,
yeah.
That shit was fierce, man. I mean,
I don't know what game he used to get Ian to sit there without hanging up, but.
I don't either. I mean, I don't see how Ian would have stayed through the whole thing. And then
at the end, he lost his cool.
He lost his cool at the end, too. He's like, You are doing this and this, and he's like, why are you yelling at me?
I'm not yelling, like a scolded kid. But you know what? I've got the answer. Everybody's been asking that all day. Why did he sit there? And this is the sign of a delusional, megalomaniacal person that actually thinks, like, when he walked away from that last night, I guarantee you he thought it was a draw. He thought he held his own. He thought that that he met us head to head and that he did good. His ego is that big that he would be fucking tied to the stake with a flame 6 feet high and still think he's not on fire. You know what I mean? Like it never even occurred to him that he was getting fucking just, you know, he was massacred last night. You know what I mean? If it was anybody else, I would have felt sorry for the stupid fuck. You know what I mean? But it was Ian Rotten, so I don't give a fucking shit. He deserves that.
He didn't make one valid argument. No, I mean he said so many lies that he believes in. He has lied so much that he believes in him now.
Dude, if that motherfucker's name was Pinocchio, we could walk on his nose from here to China.
I know. I mean, my God, he had no valid argument. He backtracked on stuff. He had excuses, and then you know when people say, "Hey, you did this, you did this." He never said he was sorry. I mean, he had no remorse. You know what? I might have been listening to this and saying, oh, my God, I'm about to tag with this guy. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to say I'm better than anybody. I mean, believe me, I've had my problems and I've been and all that. But, man, I mean, to hear him say the stuff he did and just be going, oh, whatever, that never happened. Yeah, like, I mean, he might be the Iraqi Minister of Information. When the American troops were coming into Baghdad, and he says, oh, the troops aren't in Baghdad.
The Americans aren't here. Yo, here's a great part, like, I'm trying, but you just keep fucking rambling on if you give me a chance to talk. I'm trying, but you just keep fucking running in the mouth.
Good when he comeback, actually dude. Attempted to answer a question, he stuttered more than, I mean, I don't know, man.
Oh,
He couldn't have stuttered anymore.
He needs to
He didn't have nothing to say because he was trying to fake it. When you stutter you're lying.
He's got a lot of qualifications to be like the next senator from fucking Kentucky or some shit, man. You know what I mean? Because he lies. He lies like a motherfucker. He can just sit there and be barraged and have a blank stare on his face, and he's got this power of manipulation and spin doctoring that he thinks he has, even when it's a epic fail. Shit, man, somebody put this up guy up for a fucking representative or something. He'll probably get fucking elected. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't know there was an insurance company called
Shit can't get any worse, right? And fucking professional wrestling's loss is the fucking House of Representatives gain, and we'll all have a party over it. And that's after I fucking kick his teeth in the middle of my fucking kickboxing match with his fucking ass, man. You hear me, Ian Rotten? I want you, man. I want you in the ring. I want you in the Rage Dojo.
Billy, dip yourself in iodine before you go in there, man. Like I said, because if he's got that Hep C, man, I don't want you to get that either, man.
I'll get some kind of
hazmat suit.
I showed the email Bull sent me about that. He sent me one too about him possibly having. I showed my fiance this, and she's like, "Oh my god, you're going to tag with him?" You know, and she listened to a little bit of the interview, and she's like, "If that motherfucker calls you, I'm getting on the phone and I'm going to tell his ass off because I'm a mama bear and ain't nobody going to fuck you over because of this and that and the other and all that." I'm
awesome. Good girl, man. You got a good woman.
Oh, yeah, she's great. Oh, yeah, she's great. She met me there at the tail end of when I started winding down from wrestling about 2 years ago and stuff. And, you know, she doesn't really know much about the business, but she's seen some of my tapes, and I told her some of the stories, and I've told her about people I met and all that. She said, "Wow, that's really cool," and all that. But I've also told her some of the pitfalls and some of the bullshit that happens and all that. And, you know, when she found out that JCW was calling and wanting to come work, first thing she said, "Hey, ain't that the guy that knocked that dude out in Operation Repo?" She don't know who Corporal Robinson is.
Right.
She's like, "Well, that's great. You can that can get you some good publicity and stuff. I think you should do it." You know, and of course when I was told it was Ian, I was like, "Man, I don't know. And, you know, and then I talked to Ian. I thought everything was going to be cool, and you know, and Corp had said, "Yeah, you know, he's humbled a lot now and all this." And then as soon as I said, "Hey, I'm coming back, everybody, I'm tagging with Ian. I know people are going to be pissed, but it's happening." I got emails from Justin. I got emails from Bull. Billy sent me a couple of things, you know. And these guys I respect, you know. And I appreciate and I value their opinions. You know, and for all them people who are saying, "Hey, man, that's some bad
I wasn't mad. I wasn't mad. I was just worried for you, man. I wasn't mad
I know.
At all.
Oh, I know.
Because I so want you back in the wrestling business. It's not even funny, man, you know.
Absolutely.
You know what?
Just so you guys know,
listen,
we only got about 10 minutes left. So
okay, listen, if they got any brains, they'll give you a different opportunity. But listen, let's take it one further. I don't want to see you coming out being fat fuck Barrel Boy Jr. or no shit like this. Okay, like
absolutely.
Seriously, like I when they did that shit to Mitch Page, man, I fucking hated that dude. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, you know, why can't you be Lane Bloody on your own, or you know, why can't you just be Insane Lane? What the fuck, you know what I mean? Like,
I can't be Fat Fuck Barrel Boy, damn it! I've lost 50 pounds in the last months.
Then you'd be Cousin Skinny Fuck Barrel Boy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, don't go for that. You know what I mean? That shit. I don't want to see you wrestling in a rubber fucking zombie mask either, man. You know what I mean? Like, fuck that. You know, it's bad enough. You know, maybe a helmet though to protect you from all the shit those idiots are fucking throwing and all that.
Oh, I know. Them motherfuckers throw so much shit. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't even. You know. My legendary, you know, beef with Juggalos is worldwide and renowned. I like to work, though. I don't even, if those fucking guys call me tomorrow, I don't even know what I'd do. I mean, because I could see they could make money and there could be mad heat and it could be exposure, but I just don't know what I'd do because, man, they'd really have to convince me we could do something that we could all be comfortable with because, you know,
yeah.
Oh, what am I going to come out as, the dancing cocksucker or some shit? Like, you know, like they can stick that up their ass, man. I'm not going to, you know, like, I'm not that desperate, man. I've, like, got to be something, you know, real, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I fucking wouldn't be that for fucking Vince McMahon, let alone them. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, me
right.
In a diaper, you know what I mean? Who the fuck wants to see that? I don't, you know.
Hell, I'd wrestle in a diaper. I'd actually get over with it because.
But that's
because
you got that
I'm
beautiful
nothing.
Body, man. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's
I know,
different.
Man. Man, situation ain't got shit on me, man.
That's right, man. You're the major situation.
Yeah, I'm the super situation.
I could be Snooki. I've already got the hair, you know what I mean? I'll get some Aquanet and put me in a fucking dress and some fuck me pumps. Wait a minute, I think I've already done that last year. Oh, yeah, forget it. for the movie, guys, for the movie. Anyway, I'm strangely running out of things to say at this moment. We've got
I know, and that's couple, definitely cue that it's been a long time. So
yeah, absolutely. Write this date down in history, right next to the Pearl Harbor Day. Billy Graham fucking ran out of words.
Right. So, again,
oh
I mean, we
God.
Could do this anytime. We could do it again next week. We could do it whenever
Jay,
you guys
Jay,
want.
Jay, I would like to come back next week because I think this is, you know, hit it while it's hot, man. Maybe we'd get a couple other people.
Absolutely.
To come,
we'll round up a bunch
back.
Of people.
I,
we'll do this
I,
all again.
I'd like Lane to come back, too, just to get an, even if you don't want to hang for the whole thing, bro, I'd just like to get an update on the fallout and then what the ensuing process was and the word from JCW
yeah.
on what you're going to do.
Well,
you know what
I mean? I've been trying to call Cork the last couple of days and I've sent him a couple of emails and he hasn't replied back. I know he's a busy man and whatnot, but I think they got some big Hatchet Attacks pay-per-view in Milwaukee, Wisconsin this weekend. So
yeah,
I think
yeah,
whatever materializes from that, I'm sure I'll probably know something after that. And you know,
excellent.
If he says, "Hey, look,
Lane, you
I,
just
I,
broke the you just broke the first rule of journalism." What are you doing, man? We're 10 minutes into this thing, and you break the rules of journalism. What are you doing?
You told me you knew it off air, man.
Oh well, I just saw it on a flyer.
You promised me you'd just put me over. I mean, that guy, man, he's a fucking
my
genius.
Credibility.
My credibility. Yeah, your credibility. My credibility is all turned to shit.
Yeah. In one wrestling spoiler, you went from being the poster child for decorum and goodwill toward men to just being, you betrayed the whole wrestling business, Dean.
I'm the kayfabe killer.
Yeah, the kayfabe killer, the KK. All he, well, he's you know, well, I'm not going to, you know, yeah, KKK, you know. Ian Rotten. Why does that seem like it works for me? I don't know. That should be his fucking gimmick, the Grand Wizard of Poo. The Grand Wizard of Hep C, man. What a gimmick for Juggalo Championship Wrestling. That would be awesome.
As long as the kayfabe's killed that you're, you know, not actually this fucking guy's brother, then I think everything will be all right. Whether it's bloody or anything else.
No, but that's not Ian Rotten. He retired.
Oh, that's right.
You're confused. That's the other Ian. That's Ian Bloody. This is a different guy. Ian Rotten retired from wrestling. He doesn't wrestle anymore. He
I'm
had
not
like
a
five,
very good journalist
he had,
either.
He had like five retirement shows. You know what I mean? So I can't do that. him and Pink Floyd are both done forever. You know what I mean? All right, brothers. Listen, man. We will make contact with one another tomorrow and you know make notes on any fallout from our venture tonight and I wish you both the best of luck and you too, Eric, you fucking let me get a word in edgewise, motherfucker, and I love you guys, man. Lane, I love you, man, and I'm really glad,
too,
man. I'm glad. I'm sorry that you know I'm sorry about the disappointment. I'm sorry about the emotional. Fucking seesaw, man, and you're doing the right thing, bro. I got your back, always. You know that. I always got your back,
cool, man.
Right,
thank you, Billy. Thank you, Lane.
Skeletor.
Thank y'all for having me.
Skeletor, love you, bro. All
right, man. I love you too, man.
Okay, late.
All right, we'll talk to you guys.
Yep.
Eric?
Yeah, man.
All right. Before we get off, I just want to give quick shout-outs to everybody. Thank you for all of our live listeners. We had more live listeners tonight than we've ever had in the history of the show. So I'd like to thank every one of you. I know I have a couple overseas people who will be listening on the download, namely Melt on Fire and Andrew Dixon of the UK. And Melt is out of Germany. Again, thank you all you guys for listening. We're probably going to do something similar next week because this seemed to work out pretty entertaining. And get a few different people in there. And hope everybody enjoys. Check us out next Thursday. If all of our new listeners want to go check out our archives, we'd appreciate that very, very much. Last minute words, Eric?
Just give me a call after the show's done, all right?
All right, no problem. For Eric Williams, I'm J. Cat Morris. We'll holler at you cats next week, Thursday, 9 p.m. Peace.